Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm still not 100% sure that we're actually doing this. It still feels kind of surreal.
I know.
But yeah, we're just going to see how it goes, and hopefully you'll actually end up hearing this.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, for the first time ever, we're going to be doing a mid-season Big Brother Canada podcast. We only did one about Big Brother Canada 1. Of course, that was our 100th podcast. You can go back and check that out if you want to hear what we had to say about the first season of Big Brother Canada. But I am very much loving this season, and today we're going to be talking about everything that's gone down so far, and certainly be looking ahead and talking about all the players and what we think of how they're doing and their winning chances and so forth. Of course, Dom and I did a draft. We'll be getting to that in a little while. And I think before we even get into this, though, I very much want to flag up, we do not follow the live feeds nearly as closely as we do for Big Brother US. So basically everything that we're going to be talking about is going to be based off of the edited TV show. So I'm sure plenty of people listening are going to know a lot more about what we're trying to talk about. And I'm sure we're going to get some stuff wrong. So just apologies in advance for that.
Yeah, because normally when we do Survivor coverage, we rewatch the episode, we do notes, and then we talk about it and so forth. Here, though, I haven't rewatched any of the episodes, didn't really pay attention during my one viewing of most of them. Haven't done notes, can't really remember anything that's happened, haven't watched the live feed, so a lot of the stuff we're going on is like third or fourth hand information, so this might be a bit messy in parts, but bear with us and hopefully you can get something out of this.
Yeah, I know this is a kind of a break from our normal top shelf podcasting, but yeah, it definitely we're happy to be corrected, and certainly if there's something that we're off about, let us know, because I think knowing more about the live feeds could only help. So certainly, if we get something wrong, tweet at us or something. So today we're going to be going through, as I said, the significant stuff that's happened so far. And I think the place we want to start, as we often do, is preseason. And Dom, I know with Big Brother Canada, unlike Survivor or Big Brother US, where you get like a video and stuff, with this you only really get a picture and a couple of really quick questions. Most of the time is spent just smashing Peter Brown, as it should. No one really stood out to me preseason. Did anyone stand out to you?
No, well, again, I took a look at the pictures and kind of skimmed the bios, but I didn't read them in full because I thought, in my youthful naivete, that we would be doing a podcast about this less than 6 weeks into the season. So I thought I'd have time to just read the bios and get acquainted with these people. But before I actually did that, the season started and, you know, we just got engrossed in watching it. I didn't really form any preseason impressions. The one thing I did think was, I started looking at the cast in alphabetical order, and so it had like Adele and Andrew, and you know, they looked very smart in suits and very tall and physically buff, and I thought, well, they're clearly going with a certain theme here, and then the next people were like a Nick, and you know, just a whole bunch of the complete opposite of that. We had a more balanced cast than I first thought we would.
Yeah, and I guess I'm kind of lying and I'm saying that no one stood out to me. Paul stood out to me. I thought Paul was going to have a very good chance. So,
but expand on that, Colin. Why did you think that?
I thought Paul would kind of be like a Chef Joe that doesn't suck, which obviously was wrong on a lot of different levels. But basically, like, he would just be kind of hanging out and being people's friends and would under no circumstances be in jeopardy anytime early.
How do you so consistently get these things wrong?
It's really impressive, isn't it? It's impressive is probably the wrong word, but it's like every single preseason, it's like I've lost like 8 coin flips in a row, which is just as hard as winning 8 coin flips in a row.
See, I don't think it's a coin flip, though. I think it's a rigged coin flip because you insist on picking these people who clearly just have no chance in hell of ever closing out a Big Brother season.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Maybe, just maybe, this is on me a little bit.
Maybe. So again, I didn't really pay much attention to Paul's bio, but just from the first week in the house, it seemed abundantly clear that he was just going to go down in flames very quickly. And it's
absolutely.
And it turns out that's what happened.
Right. Once I watched the first episode, I was definitely off the Paul train.
Yeah, let's get into Paul and the whole first week in general then, because this season started, I don't want to say slowly, it was more like, I think Big Brother Canada still hasn't really gotten over some of the, like the teething issues that they had in the first season. So in one regard, that's a good thing, because it means it feels much less formulaic and cookie cutter than the American version does, but in another sense, it does feel a lot more amateurish and just a bit more, it feels like at once more contrived and less contrived, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it feels more voyeuristic than the American one. Do you pick up on that? And I think it's because of that kind of, like, amateurism is the wrong word, but just because they haven't really found their footing yet.
Yeah, it feels like a televised gossip show, almost. And right. I think a lot of that is Arissa Cox and just the personality that she brings to it. But I think more than anything else, it aspires to be more lighthearted, I think, but in the process, it loses I don't want to say some of it's gravitas, because Big Brother as a show never really had that, but it doesn't really take itself as seriously as I think it needs to, given that it is still a very fledgling enterprise.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk more about Arisa later, so hopefully don't forget to do that. But let's get into Paul in this week one, this situation, him being HOH. I think before we even get into the events and what we think of him, the way that he won this HOH, I thought was very interesting, where they're all standing up on the ice blocks, and there's still, I don't know, 8 or 9 people up there, and he says, if you all just drop and give me this, you are all safe. What did you make of that?
I thought it was interesting. I wasn't really clear exactly why he was so insistent on winning HOH that early. If you are going to do that, though, firstly, you absolutely have to stick to whatever deal you make up there, because that's the one first, that's like the first credible promise that you can make in the house, and breaking it just sends a terrible message to everyone in there. I feel like there are two types of people who tend to try to win that first HOH. You have this very narrow band of people who are aware that it's typically a bad thing, but have good reason to think that they might overcome that, or that they might be in a unique position where they need to win it. And then you have the vast majority of people who want to win it, where they just, you know, they see themselves as competitors and they want to win and, you know, all of that stuff. And so it never really occurs to them to not try to win it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very much like you have your Willie Hanses, where I think they really just want it, versus like Rachel Riley, where on BB13, like, cat's out of the bag. She's going to be good in competition. She might as well take it because she's going to be in jeopardy early.
Yeah, and I feel like in a season like that, it's going to devolve very quickly into one side versus the other side. And so you just want your side to rattle off as many wins as possible. In a season like this, where it's much more undefined, I don't think you can be confident of that so early on. And if I was Paul, like, I can't imagine that Paul would be a target that early, unless he just really didn't fit in at all. But if you don't fit in at all, then winning HOH isn't really going to make a difference.
Yeah. Although, I think, like, with McCrae in BB15, it was a very good idea because he felt like he wasn't fitting in. But McCrae is certainly, unlike Paul, the type who can, once given an opportunity and not just judged on his haircut, actually really be cool with a lot of people. Sure. But Paul, I think Paul's reason, I think we even saw a confessional about it, where he was like, look at all these idiots jumping off and giving me the free safety. Like, oh, Paul.
Yeah, and I think part of it as well was the reason that Paul is one of my least favorite TV archetypes. He's that guy who wants to do it for his kids. And I always hate people like that, because it's like the achievement that they're hoping to convey to their kids is so monumentally unimportant. It's like they're not going to take anything away from that other than that you're scared of, you know, what, going down a water slide on a reality TV show. Like, it's just not. I don't like people like that.
A lot of people doing a lot of weird stuff for their kids lately.
Yeah.
Between Lindsay and Paul and Sarah and Yeah, so let's talk about Paul now and his reign during week one as HOH here. And I don't know at what point the boys versus girls dynamic started in. This is something that someone who watches the live feeds could probably help us out. And actually, I don't even know if the live feeds were going during Paul's HOH, were they?
Yeah, I feel like this is one of the things where it gets established during that dark week, and then nobody really knows what the situation is with it until quite a bit later.
Yeah, and I think unlike, maybe I may be wrong about this too, but, like, I know, once again, when McCrae won the first HOH in BB15, he was HOH for, like, 2 weeks, and the live feeds were on during the second week. And I don't know if Paul was HOH for more than, like, a calendar week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just it's format difference, and certainly when the feeds are down because the first episode hasn't aired yet, it definitely – it seems like the best stuff always happens then. We never get to see it.
Yeah, well, even before this, I think it's worth talking about this first five alliance, because this is something which obviously gets established right out of the gate. And for reasons which typically don't lead to something like that lasting too long, because it's just entirely arbitrary, right? You have no control over who those first five people are. And yet it seems this actually lasted a lot longer than it really had any right to.
Right. And I think that's because the premise of them, oh, we got to do this because we're the first five. I don't think any of them are actually thinking that. I think they're thinking, okay, we all like each other, we can all work together pretty well, and we happen to have been the first five, so that's what we're going to go with.
Yeah, it just seems like such a tenuous basis to form any kind of alliance on. I guess it kind of makes sense, right? Because people often gravitate towards the first thing that they were brought into, and obviously, given that they were the first five, it was the very first thing that they could be brought into. But beyond that, I think you're right. It's just a sense that they were all vaguely compatible, and there were none of them really wanted to turn on each other the first week, so they thought we may as well just ride it out and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's working, I don't feel like there's a big reason for anyone to jump ship. And I also don't think, like, when they got in the house and they were the only five people in there, they were like, okay, this is it, this is the crew. And everyone was like, yeah, totally. I think it was more, they got to know each other. And then that was the rationale, like, that's what stuck. But I don't think that was the basis for the alliance.
Yeah, and they all seemed to be actively looking for other options as well, in case that didn't fall through. So, like, Andrew had the thing with the guys, which he thought was quite strong. Kenny just seems to be getting along well with pretty much everybody. Sabrina and Sarah obviously had the geist thing, and then Ali was just off fancying himself as a mastermind, and you apparently brought it, which I still don't understand. But more of that later,
we'll get there.
I'm sure. Yeah. So Paul wins HOH, and he nominates Andrew, Anna, and Nick. Now, we weren't really sure what went into that decision, other than Paul wanted to, quote-unquote, make a big move. And so he goes after Andrew, and I guess Nick is there just as someone who no one would really care about.
I think that the latter, yeah, or yes, I agree, which is a Nick definitely, I mean, granted, this is based off the knowledge now that she was the first one voted out, and I think it was a unanimous vote. A Nick clearly was rubbing a lot of people the wrong way, and if your target is Andrew, if you're Paul, a Nick definitely seems like someone who would be good to just put up there against him, because no one's going to get mad at you for, kind of like Jesse at the beginning of BB15, where no one's really going to get mad at you for nominating her, and who really cares if she goes?
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to put up someone like Andrew in that first week, you really have to mean it, right? You can't just put him up and be kind of ambivalent about who you think should go home. If you're putting Andrew up, it's because you want him gone. And so whoever you choose as the pawn there has to be carefully chosen so that there's the least chance possible that they go home. And I think Nick, in that sense, might actually be a bad choice, just because it seemed like she was never going to mesh with the crowd well enough for anyone to actually want to keep her around for any length of time.
Yeah,
like she's never gonna be part of that core alliance. I guess maybe she could be like the chatty natty type, but realistically, I think she just is a very early boot more often than not.
Yeah, of course, the downside to having a Nick up there as the pawn when you're putting up the person no one really is going to be mad at you for putting up is they're also very liable to go home. Whereas with someone like, I think Sarah is like a great pawn, but the problem is a lot of people like Sarah and wouldn't want to see her on the block in the first place. So you may be doing some damage to yourself, but like. So you have to kind of pick a side between putting up someone inoffensive and someone who's actually a lock to stay and be a real pawn.
And I get that he felt constrained by the fact that he could only really justify putting up people who didn't stay up on the thing with him. Why not just play it safe, put up a Nick and somebody else, a Nick probably goes home, I imagine, and nobody would care. Like, no one would have any reason to be hostile towards you.
Yeah, playing the week one HOH is definitely a tough line to toe. And I think generally speaking, conventional wisdom at this point is that you really want to be doing stuff that isn't going to anger anyone in the house. And I think going for Andrew, especially when it's known that he has friends and while Paul doesn't know he's got like the super tight alliance, Andrew still seems like a pretty popular guy within the house, especially early. That I think that's probably a bit too aggressive, not even a bit too aggressive, far too aggressive for a week one HOH move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what I would do differently in Paul's spot. Like, I don't remember who Paul had, like, limited himself to choose between, but I think of all of those people who it could conceivably be out of everyone in the house, Andrew is a really big move to make in week one, and I think that's pretty ambitious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like if you are going to go for a big player week one, it's more often going to be like a Brian Hart situation where everybody has already turned on them. And at that point, you're not really making a quote-unquote big move anymore. You're just going along with what the house wants.
Right.
So if you do feel like you need to win that HOH week one, either it's because if you don't do it, then you're going to be a target, in which case I think you just have to make the most consensus-building move possible, or it's because the lines are already drawn because of some kind of pre-game alliance or anything like that, and there's just an obvious move that needs to be made immediately.
Right, or some kind of just like in-house dynamic where it's veterans against newbies or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I mean.
Yeah. It just goes to Paul just wanting it because he wants the guaranteed safety. It just strikes me as Paul was never, ever conceivably going to do anything in this game, even if he just hung out and never called Andrew a racist and a sexist or whatever. Where just that kind of thought process where viewing the HOH as nothing but guaranteed safety is going to, you're going to have a bad time playing Big Brother.
Yeah, in a way, he's like the worst kind of player because not only was he bad at like the main facets of the game, but he also harbored these delusions of grandeur, which meant that you couldn't just keep him under wraps as a like a reliable, quiet vote for you. He was always going to be wanting to do something loud and unpredictable.
Yeah, very good dancer, though. I liked his dance moves.
Yes.
Give him that. Got to give credit where it's due.
And he could make a fairly convincing drag queen, I think, if he wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. Paulina, right? Yeah. So what more on week one, I guess? Any parting thoughts on a Nick? Do we, who cares that Ika goes up as the replacement nominee? The feeds we weren't watching. I don't know why that happened. It seems fine with me. Plenty more on Ika coming up, I'm sure. So let's get into some.
Well, okay. I mean, it's worth asking what would have happened if Andrew had stayed up, because presumably the other people in the first five would have voted to keep him. Although I can see an argument that, given that their alliance wasn't really that solid yet, they might think they don't want to show their hand so early, and just if the rest of the house wanted him out, they would just go along with it and it would be fine.
Yeah, and this is obviously a moot point, because when Andrew wins the veto himself, he's going to just take himself down. But I'm always an advocate, when it's that early, keeping Andrew in the house, pretty much no matter who you are, is going to be a nice buffer for you going ahead, especially when he's the type, kind of like Tom last season. I know a lot of those comparisons are getting made in last season of Big Brother Canada, where he just wants to win all these competitions, and Andrew is always going to be making himself a target, and I'm an advocate for leaving him in those first few weeks, big time.
Yeah, and I do like the Tom comparison, because both of them just don't have an off switch, right? They are always going to be in there playing their hardest in every single competition and never really dialing it back at all.
Yeah, and another interesting comparison between Andrew and Tom, I think, is that Canada is screwing both of them hardcore.
I have a feeling that if you compared the Big Brother audience to Survivor, it would be generally younger, poorer, more diverse, I would imagine, and so less accepting of the people like Tom or Andrew and people in that mold generally.
Yeah, and I also think Big Brother viewers skew a lot more female than Survivor does.
Absolutely.
So I think that definitely plays into it as well.
Yeah, I think the hardcore online Survivor fan base would more resemble the Big Brother fan base, I think, if you put them together. But yeah, I think your average Survivor viewer is probably, I mean, CBS has a reputation as being like the channel for old people, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know how Big Brother US quite fits in there, but it seems like the audiences are quite different.
Oh, absolutely. I think the Big Brother audience, I'm saying this completely baselessly, but I think the Big Brother US audience is a vastly different group of people than the typical CBS viewer. And I mean, how could they not, with such gold on there like the Millers, how could you tune out of CBS ever? Yeah. Okay. Anything else on Paul's HOH?
As we say, it's entirely possible there's something incredibly interesting that happened there that we just have no recollection of. And if there is, be sure to let us know. But as it is, I think we can move on.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess briefly, parting thoughts on a Nick.
I don't have any.
She was never going to succeed. Sorry.
I think she was cast as the comic relief, but I found her pretty desperately unfunny. So whatever.
Yeah. She was kind of like the hippie Tala.
Yeah, kind of, although I didn't really like Tala that much either, so maybe I'm just not the intended audience for that.
Oh my god, love it!
Ugh.
Didn't Tala come back? Am I making this up that Tala came back? Yeah, she did, into the house this season.
She had like this cameo appearance. It's like, last season you had Dan, and this season you have Tala. I mean, it looks suspiciously French.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very, France and Canada, what kind of connection do they have? I don't like it.
So Andrew wins the week 2 HOH, and this is something we see. I don't know if there's some like psychological reason for it. Like maybe when people get put up the first week, it just lights a fire under them, and then they try really hard in the next week's competition. But it seems like it's so often we have this week one nominee who comes very close to going home or like wins a veto or whatever, ends up winning the week 2 HOH. Right.
I mean, even Marcellus in Big Brother 3 set the trend. But yeah, I mean, history aside, it's definitely maybe it is just purely psychological. Like they feel the heat and they're like, all right, well, now I got to do something about it. Like, I need to, I'm clearly in jeopardy within the game now, and I need to start imposing my will upon this. And again, I don't necessarily think this is always a great plan, but for Andrew, I certainly don't think there's a big problem with it. I feel like with specifically Andrew, or like with Tom last season again, no one's going to be surprised, especially after he's won the week one veto, much like Tom did. The cat's out of the bag, as I said before. Like, everyone knows Andrew's going to be a competitor. And while I don't like the impulse to, I'm going to play to compete and win every competition, like we saw out of also Kenny, that's like the Jeremy Maguire school of Big Brother, which is not a compliment. For Andrew, I think I have less of a problem with it than I do for pretty much anyone else.
At least this way, he doesn't run the risk of someone else winning HOH and thinking, well, he was on the block week one, let's just run it back and see what happens.
Right, right. Yeah, and then during Andrew's HOH, I thought it was very interesting, and we didn't get to see a whole lot of how this transpired, but it was like the Cool Kids Club, and then there was Paul, Adele, and Kyle on the outs. And it seemed like Adele and Kyle were only on the outs because they were the only people willing to be nice to Paul after his HOH.
Yeah, like, I don't think that was some conscious strategy on their part or anything. I think it was just they're both pretty nice, open guys, and they thought they may as well just go and comfort someone who clearly wasn't having a great time of it.
I'll say this. Adele and Kyle may be the two coolest guys on this season. They definitely seem so laid back.
Yeah, I thought Kyle was going to be this over-the-top Jersey Shore douchebag, but instead he actually is, you know, pretty mellow, pretty humble, and I think maybe the nicest guy in there, as strange as that sounds.
Yeah, what I you know, I've seen some exit interviews with Kyle and so forth, and he totally seems cool. And I thought, like much like you did, judging the book by its cover, that he was just going to be like the Canadian Jesse Godders, who was totally in love with himself, and you know, was going to be trying to win all the competitions and be kind of a dick to everyone. But that wasn't what we saw at all. And I'm sure, you know, being that we're talking about week two, I'm sure plenty of Kyle is going to be coming up. But yeah, definitely feel like off the top, that's something that very much worth pointing out. Kyle definitely seemed cool.
Mm-hmm. And Adele, again, was someone who I don't think really appeared on the show at all week one. And as you were saying to me off air, I didn't realize it at the time, but thinking about it now, it makes a lot of sense. Week one, a lot of people just weren't on the show pretty much. It was all like Andrew and Kenny, and then maybe a few other people got a look in, but not really.
Yeah, this is 100% factual. I did not know Sarah was in the house until the Divergent POV competition. I had no idea.
Yeah, but even someone like Heather, who was just not a factor at all. And you kind of understand why, given that she didn't really seem to be talking to anyone. But it's just, when you only know the names of half of the house, it's a lot more difficult to follow what's actually happening.
Right. The first week or two was basically the Andrew and with a side of Kenny show. There were, like, Sabrina wasn't there. You know, yeah. A lot of the big players, John was barely there, Arlie was barely there, of the big players. Yeah.
And again, I can understand it from the editor's perspective, given that Andrew was on the block and then HRH, and Kenny seemed to be the one he was most closely conversing with. But yeah, it was just, so it was focused on them to the exclusion and to the detriment of everybody else, it seemed.
Yeah. And again, Andrew and Kenny are compelling TV characters, but definitely it feels weird when we know that there are, 14 people left in the house, plus 3 bonus people, and all we're seeing is really Andrew. So, okay, Andrew's HOH decision now. When you have Paul, Adele, and Kyle on the outs, and you know you have to nominate 2 people with the possibility of having a replacement nominee, why put up Netta, in your opinion?
I don't know. And again, this might be something which would be more apparent if we were following the feeds closely. I guess maybe he was hedging about this whole girls versus guys thing, if that was even a thing at that point. But it just seems so weird to me.
And again, apologies, because we don't know when the girls versus guys thing or the first 5 or whatever, when all of this went down and what spawned all of it. But I definitely think the girls versus guys thing is the most likely rationale.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that quickly, because to me that seems something like, the perception among some of the girls was that, you know, the guys were strong and that they were band together, and so they wanted to get something in place to counteract that. But it feels like it was more about the perception that that was the case than it was actually the case, and then it became like a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, listen, the day that on Survivor or Big Brother, that a girls versus guys dynamic actually stays true and, like, they actually follow that, I don't have a way to close this sentence, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah, it was like Vanuatu at its high point for maybe 2 weeks, and then it just completely fell apart. Right,
right. Right.
That's the one thing. And I guess One World kind of, but that was because Kim was just, you know, going around with her whip, keeping everyone in line. So
right, in One World it happened because it was good for Kim, and that was all that mattered within the game.
And that's all that matters in life, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. All right. Okay. Well, it's just, I guess, kind of going back to that, it struck me as odd. It seems like when you have Paul, Adele, and Kyle, but probably leave Kyle off the block so he can't play veto, and then be happy to backdoor him if someone pulls themselves off with the veto. Yeah, and I think that girls versus guys dynamic, as valid as it was or not, really did play into this. And, you know, I feel like when you have Paul, Adele, and Kyle there, just put up Paul and Adele, and don't let Kyle play the veto. And then kind of like what we saw go down, where when you being Andrew, or your buddy Kenny wins the veto, you can just pull Netta off and backdoor Kyle. But you can do the same with Paul and Adele without isolating Netta.
Yeah, and Andrew was so just transparently jerky about the way he did this. It's like at the nomination ceremony, there weren't the usual niceties or trying to cover anything up. It was just, well, yeah. I'm putting you up because I don't like you, and you're a pawn and you're worthless, so that's it, guys, have fun. You know, there's no subtlety to it at all. And there's actually been kind of a theme this season, right, where it's like the HOHs are just out in the open just saying, okay, you're a pawn, you're my target, and this is what's going to happen. And if you don't like it, then, well, I don't even know.
It is very much like early, early seasons of Big Brother US, where no one has any idea what they're doing. So Kenny wins this veto, and as mentioned, you know, he pulls Netta off, and the plan to backdoor Kyle takes full effect. That's the end of Kyle. Was this the right idea here for Andrew and Kenny in the first five? Sorry.
I don't know if it was the right idea, but there doesn't seem to be much wrong with it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like when those three have kind of isolated themselves, or you've isolated them, go ahead and take out the guy, if you're Andrew and Kenny, who's probably going to be your biggest competition in competitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure there's a much more artful way to phrase that, but I share the point. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and once again, I guess kind of as we talk about parting thoughts on Kyle, I know we've already pretty much talked about it. Totally seems like the man. I very much unexpected from Kyle.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's one of those people who I don't know how he would have developed if he'd been in the house for longer, but you know, just now that he's out of the house, I think he's just one of the more grounded people that went in there at the start.
Yeah, and this is something I've noticed just in life. Canadian people are so cool and like the nicest people on the planet, and I think you see a lot of that in the BB Can House, generally speaking.
Yeah, I guess.
Much better than British people, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, well, yeah, all right, fine, that goes without saying.
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we will have quite strong criticisms of certain Canadians later in the show, but for now, yeah, we'll keep it on a positive note. So Kyle leaves, and now, at this point, Arisa announces the first big twist of the season. And
hey, guys, shh, it's a secret.
OMG, guys. So basically, three people are going to enter the war room, so a secret room that's shut off from the rest of the house, and Canada's going to vote over the course of that time period for who they want to go in. And so we're introduced to Scott, Allison, and Nate, and so they take them in, but they made this really big show about it, and in an opening episode which already contained the first full week of gameplay and so much of everything else that was going on, and our first real introductions to any of the cast, that whole contrived thing with like the Secret Service agents like plodding along the stage, slowly escorting them to the door, that was just a fucking waste of time.
I felt like a lot of this secret house guest stuff, when we're, you know, we have a real game going on here, and we're already not seeing like half of the cast on the televised aspect. Why are we spending a quarter of each episode with these three people? And I guess I get it in the sense that like if Canada's the one voting, you want them to know what they're voting on. But I feel like they have to know that, listen, it's the internet who's voting. And that's really what's going to be dictating how this goes. And they're going to be watching the live feeds anyway. Let's stick to the actual game and let's do one segment per week about these people in the diary or in the war room.
Watching them stumble blindfolded along the stage while they're surrounded by screaming fans, that doesn't accomplish that.
Yeah, there was definitely, I mean, I guess generally speaking about this point, I felt a lot of time wasted on the extra house guest twist. But let's get into this more, because I think this is pretty interesting. What did you think about this twist? Is this fair that someone gets to come in 2 weeks late?
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fair. I don't know if I like that they got this unfiltered look at what was going on in the house, really. I mean, obviously they weren't privy to every conversation that was going on, but I guess they do get information that they really shouldn't have. I'm perfectly willing to put that aside though and say that I thought this was a good idea and I was excited to see how it was going to unfold.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very interested in it, and I honestly can't figure out if I would want to be that person, because it definitely seems like in a random game of Big Brother, if you can kind of just parachute yourself in after 2 weeks have already gone down and people have gotten to hate themselves, that's a pretty good situation. At the same time, they're going to, like we saw with Allison when she entered, they were all very much sketched out by her and she became kind of an outsider, you know, with the exception of like Andrew very much taking to her. All the girls didn't seem to like her. I'm sure most of the people didn't trust her. And they were forcing her to lie about how she got into the house. Like production was forcing her to do that, which we'll talk about very shortly. So it's kind of a toss-up for me because it feels like, in theory, that should be a very good spot to be in, just getting inserted after 2 weeks. But it doesn't seem like it's working out for Allison.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the start of this then, because when this twist was first announced, I kind of registered it at the back of my mind and then didn't really think about it more. But then watching the commentary about it on Twitter and elsewhere, it seemed like everyone, like the entire alumni and most of the fans, were full bore behind Allison. And so before I saw this segment for the first time, I was wondering what was going on with this girl, where everyone was just so in love with her, you know, right out of the bat.
And I'm part of that camp. I'll admit, I very much am in love with Allison. I was certainly hoping she was going to be the one who got entered. I don't think it was a 3-horse race by any means. I think it was basically just Allison or Scott's going to get in, and Nate's just kind of there to fill the space so he doesn't pull votes from either of those two.
Yeah, I wonder if Nate, as he was like vegetating there in the house, realized that he was just never realistically going to get in.
Yeah, I suspect he probably. Who knows? But obviously, we knew from just watching from the outside that there was no chance Nate was going to get in, and I suspect the production knew that as well.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing, though, that 3 or 4 weeks on, I can sit here and say with a straight face that I almost kind of wish Nate had gone into the house instead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I think the whole thing with like snuggling up to Andrew and really getting in bed with him, figuratively and literally, I think that has been a disappointment. I think that was a smart thing to do for her, given that it seemed like none of the girls even wanted to consider her as a human being, which was, we'll get onto that in a minute, but that was kind of ridiculous. But it doesn't make for great TV. And although she seems cool as a person, she hasn't really added much to the entertainment of the season.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of see that. And I certainly think, you know, getting in the showmance with Andrew, first of all, how legit do you think this is? Because it seems like neither of them is really that into it.
Yeah, she said at the start, and she had that whole diary room entry about how it's just a strategy to get close to somebody, but it seems like it's become more than that, even if it ever wasn't. And, you know, she was, I think, on the feeds apologizing to her boyfriend or something, at least that's what I heard.
I didn't even know that!
Yeah, so it seems like this is... I feel like if you know those are the stakes going in, you have to kind of commit to it at that point. But... Yeah, and I will amend my earlier statement by saying if Nate had gone in, I would be spending these 3 weeks bitching hardcore about Allison not going in instead. So
yeah.
Maybe I'm just impossible to please. I don't know.
Yeah, because I ask because it seems like Allison, she's certainly not like objecting to it by any means, but it seems like kind of like what we were talking about earlier, the idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy, where they're both kind of like pot committed to the idea now of this being a showmance when neither of them was really that into it in the first place.
Yeah, it's like she was already ostracized by the girls, and then she latches onto the guy who is the biggest target in the house.
Right,
and
right.
And so once she does that, the perception is always going to be that the two of them are very tight and never going to split apart.
Maybe this is some next level stuff, and it's not, first of all. Let me just preface it, it's not. But
if it was.
If it was, there is so much value in, you know, we talked about Brian Hart earlier, and Dan was the one who was the only person who voted to keep him in the first week, and then Dan was kind of ostracized as this, and became basically a free agent in BB10. If Allison is recognizing that Andrew is the clear big target here, Andrew's going to go before her all the time, and then she's a free agent from there.
I don't think those two are remotely similar at all, and here's why. Firstly, when that happened in BB10, it was early on that Dan really hadn't made any enemies yet, and, you know, just because he's Dan, when he did, he was able to paper that over quite quickly. And so he didn't really have anyone who was actively looking to get him out of the house after the first 2 or 3 weeks or so. Allison, all the girls were already lined up against her, and it seemed like people like Kenny and Arlie were very suspicious of what Allison being there would do to the first 5. So it's not like anyone really had positive feelings about Allison outside of Andrew. Also, when Brian left, it was week 1, and all of them were on kind of an equal footing coming in, whereas by the time Allison got there, the first 5 was already established, and there were so many other things going on that she wasn't a part of, that there wasn't really much room for her to play and shake things up there.
Yeah, and I wasn't necessarily trying to draw, oh, this is a great comparison between Dan and BB10 and Allison now. What I just mean, when you latch on to someone who goes early, and then you don't immediately go, you're in very good shape, generally speaking.
Except when you're not. And I mean, that's kind of a flippant thing to say. But yeah, I agree in general, but it presupposes that the other people are open to working with you. And I'm not sure that's really true of Allison.
Right. And maybe in Allison's position, very much unlike Dan, there's not much she can really do to get people to fully trust her. Like, I feel like as soon as she got entered in the house, regardless of the fact that she had to lie about how she got there, there was just no way that after these people have had 2 weeks and then she just randomly shows up, like, how is anyone really going to trust her?
Yeah, and we see that reaction come out in a quite nasty way, I think, when all of the girls, and it seems like some of them are still doing it, just refer to her as New Girl over and over again. And that becomes, like, part of the lexicon for some reason. Now, what did you think about this? Because I thought, like, maybe this is just them trying to convince themselves that they hate her. It seemed very odd.
Maybe it was kind of a groupthink thing where none of them individually were like, oh, I totally hate Allison. But yeah, certainly, I think there was like a meeting where all the girls sat down and said, okay, we're not going to call her Allison, we're just going to call her the New Girl.
Yeah, it was all very catty. And I think
I was
going to
say, what strikes me as catty as fuck.
It struck me as like conditioning by people like Sabrina to make this whole girls versus guys thing seem like it was stronger than it was. If you have this new girl coming in who's clearly already shifting towards the guys, and you can make it look like she's not part of the in crowd, then that's a perfect way of reinforcing your group.
Right, and I think there was definitely an aspect of it that was in the, like, Sabrina's mind, for instance. I think a lot of the new girl stuff and kind of isolating Allison was strategic. That was her motivation. But I think at the end of the day, there was a very large aspect of it that was purely personal. And maybe even just, like, jealousy.
Yeah, and pure jealousy, yeah. I think a big part of it was she was jealous that Andrew rejected her in favor of Allison, in favor of New Girl, you know?
New Girl, right, yeah.
And then she rebounds from that by trying to hook up with the gay guy. So not a great romantic season for Sabrina so far.
Incidentally, Kenny saying, I'm an ass man, is the line of the season of maybe every season of Big Brother ever.
Yeah.
That's so good. Hey, listen, plausible deniability. It's where you want to be. Yeah, all right. One last thing about Allison is when she, you know, when Arissa was leading her into the house, and she said, you know, you can't talk about the war room. You can't tell people you've been in there for a week. You can make up whatever you want. And I thought, because I didn't watch this episode live, and I just heard about her stipulations on Twitter. And what I came up with as for how I would play it off is literally exactly the two lies that Allison told, which is, I was in the hotel this whole time. I didn't even know the game had started or whatever. You know, nothing about Canada having voted her in, which, of course, she can't talk about. So I thought this was, you know, maybe this is just me giving myself a bunch of credit, but I thought she pulled this off very well. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it sounds like something that Big Brother Canada would do, and so it's pretty much a perfect line to tell. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that, we talk a lot about about lies and in more specifics on Survivor and Big Brother, but we generally advocate for, if you're able to just tell the truth, go ahead and do that. But when you do have to lie, it has to make sense. Like, your story has to check out. And I think she did a very good job with that. Yeah, so I'm sure, you know, Allison's going to come up more as we keep going. Let's talk about Aika now being the HOH. Heather and Paul go up. And again, this struck me as kind of just weird nominations. Where it seems like, why not, if you're going to go for Paul, put up Paul and Adele, who cares?
Okay, well, apparently this was mainly the result of Sabrina just gaming as hard as she could, and she was very deftly at this point playing both sides. She was doing so in a way that was kind of obvious to people who were watching the show. Like, it was very clear that eventually this was going to blow up in her face, but that was going to come some weeks down the line. And for now, though, she did an excellent job of just completely snowing over Aika.
Yeah, and I definitely don't, I want to be clear, I don't question that was the case. It's just, it didn't seem, as someone who was like half watching the episodes, to me, Sabrina was really the one dictating how things went down, but it definitely makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So I guess, what do you think about these nominations? Do you like the idea of going for either? It seems like the target's shifted a bunch, so do you like the ideas of going for either Heather or Paul if Aika here?
Yeah, I don't like it, and I don't think that, certainly the Heather nomination wasn't motivated by strategy at all. I mean, she was the Allison before Allison in a way. The girls really didn't get along with her, and I think most of that's on them, to be honest. I can see why they would find Heather annoying, and I actually quite like her, but I'm sure we'll get on to that. But I think that was more just, the girls don't like Heather, so she's going up, and there wasn't really much more thought to that. The poor thing was just Sabrina's influence, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely seems like Aika's HOH reign was like the pinnacle of the boys versus girls idea, right?
Well, it should have been. And had she stuck to her gut instincts, I think it would have been. But Sabrina managed to ward it in a different direction.
That makes a lot of sense now that I think about it. And maybe we did see that on the TV show. But yeah, I'm totally with you. I don't think these nominations either of these nominations make very much sense for Aika.
Yeah.
And with Aika, sorry, it's hard to really think about things from Aika's position, because I feel like she's not the kind of person who's actually going to think about things correctly.
Yeah, it's funny because Sabrina sold Aika on the idea that if they kept Andrew in the house, then they wouldn't have the house coming after them, she wouldn't ruffle any feathers, and that no one really liked Heather anyway, so she could go and nobody would care. And the same thing for Paul. And then the next week, Sabrina did exactly the same thing to Rochelle about Ica, and that resulted in Ica going off and leaving instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you're Ica here, are you going for Andrew?
Yeah. I mean, if you sincerely think, as you seem to, that it's guys versus girls, then you go for the strongest guy. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Andrew and Kenny, you're nominated. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if one of them comes off for whatever reason, you put up another guy. Or you put up someone who you think is with one of those guys. So if she wants to put up new girl because that's just what she wants to do, then, you know, go for it.
Yeah, and even moreover, this seemed like an opportunity that went missed to weaponize people, to get them on your side, like Paul, or like Adele, or like Heather, that are on the outs, or maybe even like New Girl.
Yeah, I think Adele is a big one there, because Adele is obviously close to Paul, and so when you vote out Paul, you kind of push Adele away as well, right? And Adele, clearly someone who doesn't feel great about his position either, so he's going to go to whoever's going to have him, and if he perceives that to be the guys, then, well, that's what he's going to do, and you've lost someone who could have been a good ally for you. Now, as it turns out, Adele and Ica become very close, and then Adele gravitates over towards that side, but I don't think you can know that when you put up Paul and try to get him evicted.
Right, absolutely, yeah, and they did end up becoming close, but I think it's once again just Adele's willing to talk to the people that are the clear boots. He's like, he's willing to risk getting leprosy as far as the rest of the house is concerned to be a cool guy.
Yeah, now this week was actually pretty interesting because it seemed like both sides of the house flip-flop pretty constantly on which of Paul and Heather they wanted to keep in the house. So even as late as the day of the eviction, it was shifting back and forth, and they eventually settled and they eventually agreed on Paul. And when I say they, at that point, it seemed like Ica thought that Heather was going home, and that's what they wanted to do. And so when we see this vote breakdown, it comes down to the girls voting out Heather, the guys voting out Paul, and then Sarah really is in the position where either she flips on her first five alliance, or she outs herself as the mole with the girls.
Yeah, and she of course does the latter. And first of all, so much for the guys versus girls thing when all the girls are voting out Heather and all the guys are voting out Paul, which I think makes sense, first of all. Because those, you know, among the guys and the girls, Paul and Heather really were the respective outsiders.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sabrina's vote here is cast for Heather, but that was engineered by the first five so that she could continue being like the mole that wasn't a mole within the girls, right? So when Sarah outs herself as the mole, all of the girls start bitching about Sarah, which then gives Sabrina an opportunity to really cement herself with them even further.
Yeah, and this was a very clear play, I thought. This was a very good play, and also a very accurate play to have Sabrina misdirect her vote. You know, she knows Paul's going.
At some point, if you're Sabrina, don't you have to think that if I'm able to exert such influence over these girls, and I'm pretty sure that these are not only people I can beat in the end, but maybe the only people that I can beat in the end, why not just flip on the first five and actually throw my lot in with the girls?
That's a good question, and I've been very curious as to how this first five got so damn strong, with the exception of Arlie. I think the other four are all totally all in on the idea of the first five going deep, and certainly Arlie is not. You know, we got that great scene of him in the storage room or whatever, maybe it was in the bathroom, where he's talking about, all right, let's start taking these first five people out, and then I'm going to be in charge.
I think only you thought that was a great scene, by the way.
It was a great scene. I think he's right. Plenty more. I'm sure we'll talk about Arlie, because I'm sure you're not thrilled with me loving Arlie so much, if I'm picking up on your very subtle vibes.
That might be accurate, but yeah, the other point to be made here is about Sarah, because on that night, she clearly made a few enemies among the girls, but she seems to have rebounded from that very well indeed, to the point where they're not looking at her as a possible target, and they don't really seem to have any resentment towards her anymore.
Yeah, this was very well executed as far as her, you know, ostensibly, I think, just outright lying about the way she was going to vote all week to everyone who was voting Heather out. And now it seemed to have basically zero backlash.
Yeah, it's kind of impressive, actually. And so when we talk about our potential winners, I think Sarah's going to be right in the mixer.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Just putting it out there, Sarah's a very good player, I think.
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on her to some extent, as in she's clearly made very good relationships with a lot of people in the house, but she hasn't really had to use those as leverage to make something happen yet, as far as I can tell. So maybe when she does, we'll get a better picture of just how well she's playing. But yeah, she definitely does seem to be playing one of the, if not the best game at the moment.
Right, yeah, and I think, you know, it's always worth bringing up, it is very hard to be good at Big Brother, I think, and Sarah's definitely showing me signs of talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about something that we haven't seen a ton on the TV show, but I know it was a big deal within the house, which is during the Buzzworthy competition, Adele got this power, and he lied to everyone about, except Ica and Paul, about what it does. What are you picking up on this? Because I know this is something you just mentioned to me off air. This was a very big deal in the house.
Yeah, and I'm still not quite sure how all of the fallout from this happened, but basically, Adele realized that if he just lied about his power and made it out to be more than it was, firstly, no one would want to take the risk of putting him up because they were worried about what might happen. And secondly, people would be wanting to align with him because they would want to use that to their advantage. And so he would go from being on the outs after Paul left and just having no allies at all to being someone who everyone was trying to court over to their side.
Yeah, it is weird, first of all, when you're presented with a situation, kind of like Kenny said, or maybe it was Andrew, where Adele, you know he got a power, but you don't know if it's a slot pass or a diamond power of veto. And in that situation, you have to be very careful about Adele. And I think you're right. For as long as he sits on this power, it's going to be really impossible to nominate him, just out of concern for what he could have.
Yeah, and I don't think this like catalyzed anything in particular. It's more that it created this sense of paranoia that allowed people like Sabrina and Sarah to really work their magic on the girls.
Yeah, okay. So Ica wins this week's veto. And incidentally, you know, this is the one where they're going up on the balance beam and they're dressed up like squirrels. This setup is such a joke where it's the puzzle stations are like triangular, where Andrew's at the front and everyone can see what Andrew's puzzle answer is and he can't see what anyone else is doing. This is such Bush League production as far as I'm concerned. So just random calling out of production there. But nonetheless, so Heather, you know, Ica wins. Heather and Paul are going to remain as the nominees, and Paul goes out. So I guess parting thoughts on Paul here.
Well, I'll get your final thoughts on Paul first, because I'm sure you have a eulogy to say about the guy.
I don't. Listen, as I said, I was not a Paul fan as soon as I saw the first 10 minutes of the first episode. He just stood out to me as someone who could go deep preseason, much more so than anyone else. And obviously that didn't come in. I did like Paul. He certainly seemed like a nice enough guy, generally speaking. Like, I'm sure in the outside world, when he's not trying to strategically throw people under the bus and call them racist and homophobic and sexist or whatever, that Paul's a really cool guy. And I did think he brought a lot to the season, at the very least.
Yeah, I'm sure he is a nice guy in real life, whatever that means. But I found him annoying, and I was glad that he was gone. Especially since it meant that Heather stayed, because I love Heather. She's great.
Why do you love Heather, just incidentally?
I know. I felt bad for her because she, like, no one took her seriously or even just gave her the time of day. Like, no one ever really wanted to speak to her. And she just seemed pretty positive, fairly upbeat, quite snarky in a fun way when the girls were being mean to her. And, you know, she's nice.
Okay, fair enough. It's just very much unlike you to actually like people.
I know. I'm not quite sure. This is a strange feeling I'm having, but yeah.
Yeah. One other thing about Paul, it got brought to my attention. Paul had a cameo just as himself many years ago on easily my favorite reality show of all time, Kenny versus Spenny. He was in an episode of that for like 30 seconds. Apropos of nothing, it's a Canadian show as well. Watch Kenny versus Spenny. It's all on YouTube. It is so good. So week four now, Rochelle wins this HOH. It's the endurance competition. And this is where I thought we really started to see what Sabrina was really doing within the house. But apparently, you know, she was all over Ica's HOH too. And it wouldn't surprise me if she was, you know, dictating Andrew and maybe even had some influence over Paul in week one. But let's talk about Sabrina, I think, because Sabrina is really standing out as like an Amanda character without the machismo almost. Let me try to think of the word here. Without like the forcefulness.
Yeah, she's more lighthearted and less aggressive than Amanda, but I think it's a great comparison. I come back to the same point though. Like, and we see during Rochelle's HOH week, she just like mind fucks it into putting up. I mean, I say mind fuck. I'm not sure Rochelle actually has a mind to fuck, but she convinces her, let's say, to put up Ica, which I think some people were throwing this around as maybe one of the worst set of nominations of all time. I think it's certainly up there. And like, why not? If you've shown that you can get Rochelle to do something so mind-numbingly stupid, why not keep her around for as long as possible and put her in a position of power so that when it gets down to like final six or final five or something, you can get her to make the moves you needed to make? Like, why not set up an endgame where it's you and a bunch of these people that you can beat in the end and that you can influence more easily?
Right. Oh, totally. Where when you see demonstrated that you have basically total control over Rochelle, and it's kind of like what we talked about earlier, I know this is what you're saying, with maybe sticking with the Girls Alliance, which is, if this is going well and everyone's totally buying it, fuck the first five. Like, go with the people that you can just totally manipulate.
Yeah, for sure. Like, the only one in that group who seems to be competent or having the head in the game is Nada. And you can deal with her down the line. And even she by herself is a much lesser threat than, like, Andrew and Kenny and John and all of these other people put together.
But yeah, so Rochelle puts up Allison and Heather here. And this basically signals to me that, okay, the boys versus girls thing is over. But as we see on the show, it's really Sabrina just dictating what's happening. Are you buying Sabrina as a very good player?
No, I'm not. This is like the classic Russell school of gameplay, where it's like she is very good at making things happen, but it's not, she's not doing so in a way that's conducive to her winning at all. Right, eventually, okay. And like at the moment, the people in the first five are starting to recognize that Sabrina might be a liability down the road because she is drawing so much attention to herself and because she is playing the game so hard. And even the people who she used to be able to pull the wool over very easily, like Aiko and everyone, they all seem to hate her on their way out, right? They are starting to turn on her now as well. Only Rochelle still seems to have any sense of loyalty towards her, and that's really not useful.
Right, right. And it strikes me, I think Amanda is a great comparison, where, although maybe Amanda, like, I feel like Amanda was a legitimate endgame threat just out of respect, whereas I feel like with Sabrina, everyone's just feeling like, you know, hypothetically, were she to go on to just run this season and dictate every HOH and so on, everyone would be pretty mad at her at the end and not overly inclined to vote for her.
Right, and this is why this is so bad, because she's not beating Kenny, she's not beating Sarah, like, maybe she could beat Arlie or someone like that, but why...
How dare you!
Why go through all that effort when you could just take someone like Aiko or Rochelle and run the table very easily?
Right, right. It definitely seems like the running theme here is Sabrina, as effective as she's been, is definitely... I think Russell Hance is actually a very solid comparison, where she's a great tactician, very poor strategist.
Yeah, like, if Sabrina had managed to get Rochelle or Aiko to evict Kenny, let's say, during one of their HOH weeks, I think she would be right at the top of the power rankings right now. But as it is, everyone sees through her. She doesn't have any solid allies left in the house, really. And even if she does somehow manage to, you know, fight and scratch her way to the end, no one's going to vote for her.
Right, yeah, I think she's done herself a favor almost in that she's nominated against exactly Andrew, because I think otherwise she would be likely to leave.
Yeah, and if this does turn out to be the thing that ruins her game, she can always console herself with the fact that, oh, well, it's Canada that did this to me and not, you know, my own actions.
Right, well, I mean, as invalid as that idea may be, but yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Although I'm not sure... Yeah. For someone like Sabrina, who took being nominated like that so hard, I don't think that's going to be any consolation. Like, the fact that Canada hates her seems to have come as a shock to her.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I'm sure we'll get more into this as we talk about Canada being the HOH. I feel like it's really tough to think, when you're actually in there and everyone's a first-time player, and you, of all people, get nominated by Canada, that's got to suck balls, right? Like, it's got to be like such a splash of water in the face to wake you up.
Yeah, Kenny actually had a quite perceptive comment about this when he said, like, after spending so long in this house locked up 24/7 with each other, we kind of have a rough idea of how each of us is perceived in the house. We have no idea what's being edited and being broadcast beyond these walls. So, I mean, you have some clues, right? Like, Adele winning that power, for instance, has to clue you into something. But yeah, it's got to come as a shock, especially for the people who get evicted and go outside of this torrent of hate that they really never expected while they were in the house.
Yeah, and incidentally, we've talked about Adele's power, but I didn't bring up, I was floored that Adele won. I had no idea he was so popular. I get it, he seems like a totally laid-back dude, but I had no idea that transcended to the point that he's going to just automatically win this competition.
Yeah, I think some of that is people not wanting to see the first five do well for whatever reason, which I think is a usual reason, right? Like, they're in control, people want to see that get overthrown. They seem to object to, certainly Andrew, and that's understandable. They seem to hate Kenny, which I think is... I mean, I'm a fan of Kenny, but I can kind of see why they don't like him either, and I'm sure more on that later. And Adele, like, who are the other options, really, for people outside that group? It's, they're not going to vote for Arlie, I'm sorry. Someone like Neda, for instance, is likable, but doesn't really jump out of the screen at you. Rochelle, obviously, isn't going to win. Adele's really the only person that they can rally around as someone who might be able to overthrow them.
Yeah, It definitely does make sense. It just kind of took me back a little bit. Or I was taken aback. I don't know how to phrase that in the present tense, or the past tense, that Adele was overwhelmingly popular. And again, I very much like Adele. And incidentally, is Kenny really hated? Because it seems like Kenny's getting a pretty good edit.
And I think part of that is like the LJ syndrome, where it's just this kind of white guy who's not obviously mentally unstable, so people don't really like him that much. Like, his reaction to the whole Ica letters thing, where he was just going very over the top, aggressive at Ica, that wasn't a good showing for him, I don't think.
Okay, yeah, and kind of like when Paul called out Andrew after the nomination ceremony, and Kenny was like fucking swearing at him and so forth. Like, I definitely don't think Kenny is always doing himself a bunch of favors, but it seems like ostensibly he would be very much one of the fan favorites.
Yeah, it's like, he seems good-humored, but then when it comes down to it, he can get very self-righteous, and I think that's what turns a lot of people off.
Exactly.
He seems like someone who you would want to have on board in the real world or whatever, but I can see why, you know, if you're watching him on a TV show, you might object to that.
Yeah, and I, you know, of course we're going to be talking more about Kenny and about all the people left in the game, but I definitely do think he's playing a little bit too hard too fast. So Allison wins this power veto, takes herself off, and the plan to go to backdoor Ica goes into motion. And I know we've talked about this is not a very good idea for either Rochelle or Sabrina, I don't think, because Ica definitely seems like someone that could be useful for both of them going forward.
It's a monstrously stupid idea for Rochelle in particular, because Rochelle is someone who, again, not a serious contender to win the game in any circumstance, I don't think. But certainly the one way she might be able to do it is to be against someone like Ica, who has made herself quite unpopular. And yeah. It's like the logic that Sabrina sold to Rochelle was, look, you can go with what the house wants, no one will come after you, we can get out Ica and then we can regroup and move forward. But I feel like if Rochelle had taken a shot at Andrew, even if whoever you think is in Andrew's alliance wins, they're not going to come after Rochelle, I don't think. They're going to be going after Ica and, you know, people that they perceive as being bigger threats than Rochelle. So Rochelle was never really in danger anyway. She might be now, given that she has no solid allies left. And she's taken out the one person she might have been able to beat. It's just not a good idea for her at all.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And Rochelle kind of strikes me, and this is going to ring false for people who know their history, because this backfired greatly, but this HOH win was a lot like Jennifer in BB6 winning the Glass House HOH.
No,
where she takes her shot at... Well, no, listen. Where she at least knows that she can take a shot at Kacer and probably not be a big target. Granted, she got evicted the next week, which kind of screws this up. But I feel like she's in that kind of spot where no one's paying attention to Rochelle, and she can really do whatever she wants. She, like, Rochelle is the exact HOH who can take out someone like Andrew. Yeah, so let me ask you, because obviously not great for Rochelle, obviously not great for Sabrina, but is this the right boot if we're looking at this from the perspective of the first five, excuse me?
Well, for some people in the first five, certainly, yeah. I guess if the choice is between Rochelle looking at someone like Andrew or Kenny or voting out Ica, then the choice is clear there. But part of me thinks that if you can get Rochelle to put up Ica, you can kind of get her to just put up anyone, right? Like, if you want to take out John, for instance, I don't even know why you would, but let's say that's what you wanted to do. I'm sure Sabrina could come up with a way to make that happen.
Right, and this is really what's interesting to me is the first five really don't seem to be acting like it seems like even as big of a presence as they've been and as much game as Sabrina and Kenny and Andrew talk, it seems like they're really playing like chickens with their heads cut off.
Why do you say that?
It just feels like they've had several opportunities that have gone borderline wasted, at least, where, and certainly Arlie's not feeling secure with them. Like, I feel like they could be doing a better job there. I feel like they're just so invested in the idea of the alliance and not really thinking about what's best for the alliance.
Well, I didn't know what more you could want when two people from the other side won HOH in consecutive weeks, and in neither of those weeks did someone from your side go home. Like, this is basically the perfect realistic outcome.
Is Rochelle really on the other side, though, if Sabrina is her best friend?
Well, is anyone really on the other side, then, if Sabrina's their best friend? I mean, you do make a good point, though, because for as much as this girls versus guys thing gets talked about a lot, it's like, firstly, I don't agree that Rochelle putting up Heather and Allison was the end of that, because those two were never really in it anyway. I mean, if anything, they were the people that they define themselves in opposition to, if you like. But also, it's weird because you have this first five and then this other alliance, but because the first five isn't known about by anyone outside of it, it's not like the girls have any idea who they're actually against, right? Because they see Andrew and Kenny as this sort of thing, which they are, and then Sarah kind of exposed herself as not being with them and maybe being with Andrew and Kenny. But beyond that, yeah, like maybe John's with them. Who knows? Like they don't know who they're fighting against, right? So you have you have one alliance who has a clear idea of what they want, and another alliance that just doesn't really have a good picture of what's happening.
And okay, so maybe that speaks to that they're playing well in the sense that they're staying disguised. But I definitely, and you make a good point that, you know, when two people from the opposing alliance win HOH and none of them goes home, that's definitely a good sign. It just feels like everyone in the alliance, be it Sabrina, Andrew, and Kenny playing too hard, too fast, Sarah, I think, is playing well, and Arlie just seems to have no interest in it whatsoever. And I don't think that that makes a winning formula for an alliance.
Yeah, I think the real core of that is Kenny and Sarah, who I think will be very tight going forward. They both recognize that Andrew and Sabrina are drawing so much attention to themselves that it might actually be good for them if the two of them leave as quickly as they can. And I think actually, and I think this twist where Canada's the HOH could turn out to be a good thing for them, because if they try and get Andrew and Sabrina out themselves, then they look so wolfy. Like, for them to be making a move against one of their own would just completely tear everything open. Whereas if it gets done almost by like an act of God, if that makes sense, then it's they don't have to expose themselves at all.
Yeah, oh, there's definitely a lot of opportunity to be had when Canada is the HOH. You know, you don't get to control the nominations, but you can absolutely play it off with no blood on your hands.
Right, because if Kenny thinks that Andrew being there is risky for his game, but he can't find a way to get Andrew out without looking terrible himself, then having Andrew leave by this kind of crazy, weird coincidence is actually the perfect thing for him.
Right, yeah, and I think Andrew, I think everyone in the first five would be wise to be viewing Andrew as someone who is, for all intents and purposes, a temporary player. Like, he's not, his best case scenario is like Big Frank, where he goes out at like Final Eight because he rattled off like 10 competitions.
Yeah.
Right, and I think you need to have that in mind when you're playing in Kenny or Sarah or Sabrina or Arlie's spots. Not that I think Arlie gives a fuck, which is awesome.
I think Arlie certainly gives a fuck because he has these delusions of grandeur where he thinks that he's a much better player than he is. And he's just kind of off in the corner pleasuring himself to images of what he's going to do in 2 weeks when, yeah, he was saying exactly the same thing 3 weeks ago. I mean, he hasn't done anything and he won't. He's such a tryhard.
Listen, Arlie, all you got to do for the first like month and a half is chill poolside. Like, he knows that. That's perfect.
Okay, but he's not doing that. He's acting in such an overly suspicious way that people aren't buying what he's selling.
Right, but I had exactly these same concerns about Andy Heron, and look how that turned out.
Okay, well, it's official then. Arlie is your Paul Jackson Memorial Inexplicable Colton favorite of the season.
I like it. Who is the Nick Juhas Memorial Wolf of the season, by the way?
Arlie, I think. I mean,
it's got to be Arlie. Yeah, that's fair.
All the rewards. He can be the Gen Line Memorial Fox of the season as well, if you like.
Yeah, sure. All right, let's get into something. I thought this was very interesting. Ika, you know, they have this luxury competition where there are a bunch of balls that fall out from the sky into the backyard and they have to count them. And Ika is the one who ends up getting this right. And so her luxury is she gets to choose between a $5,000 check with a Q-U-E for some reason, and which is actually, I think, how you spell it, too.
Absolutely.
Which is annoying. Which is annoying.
Better for Scrabble. And,
yeah, very valuable at Scrabble, I'm sure. What if that's like a 17-point word? But nonetheless, you know, so she has this decision where everyone else is also able to watch her, which she doesn't know. But I think after Topaz and her HOH, where, or, you know, she was talking through, as everyone could see or everyone could hear and see her rationale, you have to err on the side of caution here. So let's get into this. Where do you want to start with Ika and this decision?
I mean, it set your heart racing in a way that things very rarely do on any of these shows, but in particular Big Brother, where you don't really have these overly emotional moments, except when it seems very forced. Like, okay, occasionally you have these big fights or whatever, but you kind of sit back and watch that with a very detached perspective. But with this, it was very hard not to kind of be engrossed by what was happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just kind of to cut to the chase, when you're Ika, you know you're gone, you know nothing's going to change that. Take the fucking money. Why not, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm taking the 5K all day, every day there. But
right.
Yeah.
The problem is execution, where not that it matters, once again. Like, she's gone. She knows she's getting voted out. But I think you're right that it did really ring very emotional because she had no reason to, you know, be telling Kenny to go fuck himself as he burns his check or whatever. And again, she doesn't know that they're seeing her doing all this. But at the same time, regardless of whether she knows or not, this seemed very over the top to me. And it really did scream to me that she was very, very emotionally invested in a lot of the people here, not in a good way.
Do you think that was forced then? Like, do you think she was putting on something because she thought that this was another Topaz?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that was genuinely what she was feeling.
I don't think she was weighing up. Do I put these people on blast or do I simmer down and do what's sensible? I think she just genuinely didn't like them, and so she thought she would just let them know how she felt.
Yeah, I'm sure it didn't even cross her mind that they might be watching.
I think it did, right? Because didn't she even voice that concern that she might be like in that same spot?
Oh, maybe she did. Again, I barely watched these episodes.
Fair enough. Sorry. But yeah, it's and the reactions to it, like, obviously you know that Sarah's going to cry, you know that Andrew's going to get very upset about it, but Kenny, I thought, really, I don't think he disgraced himself, but he kind of showed a much more vicious side to him than we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of like a syndrome with Kenny, where I think he likes the idea of being like the voice of the house, where everyone's mad at Ika, so he's gonna flip her the double bird and tell her to get fucked or whatever, as she's shredding the letters.
Yeah, I don't think this was a direct response to the decision that she made, right? Like, if Adele was in that situation instead, I don't think he would be nearly as upset about it. I think it's more that things were so poisonous, as he sees it, between him and Ika and the rest of the house, that this was just like the thing that brought it all to a conclusion.
Yeah, and I think maybe even taking the money is exclusive to, like, exactly Ika in that spot.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think they got very lucky that Ika was the one who ended up winning. I mean, unlucky in the sense that they lost another $5,000 or whatever. but you know what I mean? Where Ika is actually a person who has a very real decision there. Like, I don't think even Andrew or Kenny or Sabrina or anyone would even consider taking the money when they feel like they've got another 2 months to play. Yeah. All right, so let's see. Let's get into week 5. Now, Canada is the HOH, which is hilarious. It brings up again, I always am curious about this on Big Brother US. Why are we regressing to the point of going as close to Big Brother 1 as possible? Why are we, like, we've seen what happens when the viewers dictate the events in the house. It's not good. Why do we keep doing this?
I don't hate it, mainly because I don't really like Andrew or Sabrina, and that's about that's as philosophical as I'm going to get about it, right?
Like, yeah, very fair opinion, Dom.
I'm sure if it was like Kenny and Heather out there or something, I'd be all up in arms about it, but yeah, I don't care, whatever.
Who do you hate more, Kenny and Sabrina or Arlie?
Arlie, for sure. Because I know I know that you might share my opinions about Andrew and Sabrina, but you just have this weird fanboy crush on Arlie, which I will never understand.
I don't, I don't give a shit about how Arlie does. I just feel like he's playing well, and if for some reason that opinion really sets people off.
How is he playing well? Like, this idea that Arlie might be a top 10 Big Brother player of all time, which, spoiler alert, he isn't, okay? That should go without saying. But it's like, that scene of him sitting in that room saying to himself, you know, give me 2 weeks and I'm gonna tear down this whole house, that was the most cringeworthy thing I might have seen in quite a while. That was...
Besides Paul shirtless with a squirrel costume on?
Okay, that was the other... Alright, it's not the most cringeworthy thing done by one of your favourites this season, but it's certainly up there. Like, that was just... That was Peter Brown levels of just frustration and delusion.
Yeah, I honestly think I've had a lot of fun times doing this podcast. My worst call of all time was about the Shield last season.
Yeah, that was...
And that's a high... I've had some terrible calls.
I enjoyed one of our frequent correspondents like dredging up the tweet that you made from like 10 yeah. months ago saying they've had the best first 2 weeks in Big Brother history. I was like, that was, yeah, that was, that, I enjoyed reliving that.
Yeah, oh, as did I. That was great times, good, fond memories. Okay, so Andrew and Sabrina go up here. Thoughts on this? Was this surprising at all? Because I don't know why... The first five, apart from just getting so much screen time, they don't strike me as people that Canada would be hating.
Well, I don't think that Canada hates them. I think that the subsection of Canada that watches Big Brother is more inclined to hate them, right?
Okay.
And I think, again, part of that is they just want to see something happen, and it's not really all that entertaining to watch, you know, Andrew and Kenny just, you know, do their thing while the rest of the house can't get anything together. right? Like, Adele is putting a valiant effort forward, but even he isn't really managing to make anything happen. And so they, you know, if they aren't going to do it, then Canada thinks, well, we may as well take matters into our own hands and finally take these people down. And also, again, it's just Sabrina can come off as annoying. Sarah, I think, was maybe more perceptive than anyone else in saying that there's a side to her that Canada could easily find annoying, and if they show that side, then she could go up, right? So
right.
She doesn't know how she's being portrayed out there, and then Andrew and Kenny, again, are going to be the the people who like Ika and Adele really aren't going to like Andrew and Kenny, so...
Okay, that's definitely fair. And before we even get into... go ahead.
And no one cares about Ollie. Just... sorry.
Perfect. Just like we drew it up. Okay. So before we even get into the ideas of Canada being the HOH and so forth, how do you think it changes things in the house when people are now aware that Andrew and Sabrina are the least popular?
It's interesting because you can't really change the perception that Canada's had of you so far. Like if someone like Allison, for instance, gets spooked and just immediately runs away from Andrew, people are going to see that for what it is, right? They're not going to be convinced by her trying to disassociate herself from the people that have been nominated. So I'm not sure there's anything they really can do, especially since they know that they can only put forward what the editors want to put forward. They don't have any direct control over it.
I guess I just mean, because like Sarah pointed out, if you're in the unpopular alliance, and I think this is a much bigger deal in Big Brother US, where I think, Grodner has her hands in a lot of different jars and maybe influencing the outcome from time to time. Where if you're in the unpopular alliance, fucking bail if you're on Big Brother US. Whereas in Big Brother Canada, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but I would definitely be very concerned.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to how big a role do you expect these kind of twists to have in the season, right? I mean, if you think it's going to be something where every other week or every 2 or 3 weeks, Canada's going to get a chance to influence the game in some way, then yeah, maybe you try and hook up with someone who does seem to be popular. But even if you do that, though, it's like once you get down to the end game, if Canada's going to have this degree of control over the season, are you actually going to be able to get rid of that person or beat them in the end if there is some kind of manipulation from on high?
Yeah, I think it still remains to be seen, regardless of what people want to say about, when Tom was HOH last year and had to do the backdoor veto, basically, and put up a Neil because Canada vetoed Suzette for whatever reason. I still think... I wouldn't necessarily be assuming if I'm in the house there that I need to stay on the popular side because I don't think it certainly doesn't matter as much as it does in Big Brother US.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think in kind of getting into this idea of Canada as the HOH though, I definitely want to flag up that for me, it rings so false and is very unsatisfying to the point of being basically like complete bullshit that Canada is the person who gets to crack open the final, the first five. Sorry, I always say final five. It's like in baseball, which Dom is a game that we play in America. One of the rules of like umpiring is the first hit for either team needs to be completely clean because otherwise you're breaking up a no hitter basically for a questionable call. And that seems like a very apt analogy for me here, where Canada getting to crack open the first five is so, as I said before, just totally unsatisfying, where it seems like let someone in the actual game do this or else let them run the table.
I don't know. To what degree do you think you can really complain about this when having watched the first season, you know that this kind of thing is going to happen?
Yeah, and I think kind of along those lines, and this may be the only good point Peter Brown has ever made in his life, which is that Big Brother Canada is not Big Brother US, in that there are a lot of international influences over the gameplay where the viewership really does get to dictate some of the stuff that happens, and that's fine with me. I really, like, as much as it tarnishes the game, I don't have a problem with that when it's been a franchise-long thing, granted we're only two seasons in. But at the same time, it certainly does, without question, tarnish the game. Like, it removes purity from what should be something contained solely within the house, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you have a principled objection to something like America's Player, then, in that case?
Listen, when I was watching Big Brother 8 in real time, I had no problem with America's Player. I understand why Eric would take that, because it seems like, oh, I'm going to get some information about how America's feeling about how all this goes down. However, I do have a problem with it when it eventually becomes used solely to help Evil Dick.
Yeah, I think if you're going to use that in an otherwise fair way, then I think that hits a sweet spot of what you can do with outside influence from the audience, right? Like, that's kind of the ideal thing. You want it to be more than just America voting on what the house guests on Slop get to eat for the week, but you don't want it to have this overwhelming effect on the game where it's like America is the primary player and everything else is crowded out.
Right, right, exactly. And I feel like when you give Eric Stein, like, pretty much the only capable player in the house, like, Dick knows his shit, but does not act on it whatsoever, where Eric really can just flip the house at will and you're forcing him to do everything on Evil Dick's behalf, that definitely crosses the line for me. And you're right, listen, America just getting to vote on what the have-nots get to eat isn't overly, like, rewarding. But who cares? Like, why do we need the whatever country is hosting this to have to impact the game? What's it? Why are we going back to Big Brother 1?
Well, I don't think you want to have an entirely, like, self-contained game where there's just no kind of way for people to have any input at all, right?
Why?
Because Big Brother is a much more immersive and interactive experience than something like Survivor is. I mean, firstly, of course, you couldn't do it with Survivor because it's filmed, you know, 3 or 4 months in advance. But with Big Brother, you do have these people who watch the show very closely, are very invested in the outcomes, and for them to feel like they have the ability to at least have their say, and it allows them to really drive up interest in the show because they can say to people, look, you have the ability to at least cast a vote and make something happen.
Okay, I suppose my platform of fuck the viewers is not what would make me a network president. So, yeah. Yeah, all right. Actually, one other thing I wanted to point out is kind of along these same lines of, you know, Andrew and Sabrina going up, the first five getting taken down, at least one of them going down, at Canada's hands. This seems a lot to me like when Jeff got the coup d'etat in Big Brother 11 because America gave it to him and took out Jesse. Granted, Jesse was in an infinitely better position than either Andrew or Sabrina are in, but it just is so unsatisfying once again, where you know, we get these big players and then for outside influence to be what ends their story and ends their game and ends their season. It's so unrewarding. It feels like it's so cheap and invalid that if it's, say it's Big Brother 1 and America or Canada or United Kingdom is voting to evict people, there's still plenty of strategy that can be applied there. I just feel like when we have the game laid out and we know what it is, to then just throw this in and just cancel the game for a week and let Canada figure out what's going to happen is totally like it doesn't. It's not the game, basically. It's a completely different situation.
When you say we know what the game is, we know that this game involves this kind of random thing that we might not like in the abstract, but which is, you know, either needed or wanted to keep the viewers interested.
Okay, that's definitely fair. Now, let's take a look. You know, we've gone through what's happened so far. Let's take a look at what's going to be happening going ahead. And I think the way to do this is probably just to be talking about the players themselves. And now, Dom, as we do for every season that we cover, we did a draft, and I think why not take them in the order that they were drafted? And I had the number one overall pick, and with that pick, I took John. So where do we want to start on John?
Yeah, now John's someone we haven't really spoken about at all so far, right? Like he's just kind of there. I think this is a classic example of you wanting there to be more than there is. Right.
You see, I think you're absolutely right. Yes, but he is just there, and what he's doing so far is definitely fine.
Right, but you see someone like John who hasn't really done anything good or bad so far, and it's like you get to project your own hopes of what could happen onto John, and I don't really think that's warranted. Like, he just doesn't strike me as a type who's going to make something happen if it needs to.
Okay, I think you're absolutely right, first of all, that I am projecting more onto John and his skill level based on what I want to see rather than what I have seen. However, if I'm trying to, like, draw up a great Big Brother player, what they're going to be doing for the first month or two is just hanging out and not doing anything good or bad, and that's what John's done so far. And he seems really personable, and people seem to like him.
Okay, but that also describes the vast majority of mediocre Big Brother players.
That's definitely fair, too. But I think what sets John apart from that, you know, not like an Erica or whatever, or maybe even a whomever you are so inclined to put in as like a classic floater. I think John really is having good discussions with people, and people seem to actively like John rather than to actively not care. You know, as mentioned, I picked John first overall. You laughed at me. Who would you have taken first overall?
Probably Sarah, although I think Kenny's defensible. It's certainly not John, though.
Kenny is not defensible. Sarah is defensible. And let's get into Kenny, because I think John, you know, John goes number one overall because he's not really doing much. You know, he's doing, in my opinion, some good stuff just for himself, just by hanging out. But he's certainly not a big player within the game. You know, he got the veto this week. He sat on it, whatever. Who cares at this point? But let's get into Kenny, because I think you're absolutely right that if Kenny makes the final two, he's nearly a lock to win against anyone he's conceivably there against, with the possible exception of Sarah, perhaps. But I think Kenny's just playing too hard, too fast. And I was on it. Like, Kenny, when you picked him second overall, he was like seventh on my draft board.
That's interesting, because I feel like at the moment, he has both Andrew and Sabrina as shields, and I think either of them would go before he would. And once Andrew and or Sabrina is gone, the people in the house who you might consider floaters at this point, they don't really seem to have anything against Kenny. Like, Neda, for instance, said she seemed to want to work with him. I think Rochelle, for instance, seems pretty favorable towards Kenny. Like, there are just lots of people there where if Kenny wants to enlist them and is proactive in doing so, I think he can make it happen.
Yeah, and I was thinking about earlier today, all of the, you know, because we drafted yesterday, and I was thinking about how I was going to berate this Kenny pick. And I think, honestly, I would have said all of the same stuff after the first month about Emmett last season. And obviously, Emmett turned out to be a great player. And I could definitely see that being the case with Kenny.
Yeah, and I think Emmett's actually the perfect comparison, right?
Yeah.
I think Emmett has proven himself to be not in a league of his own, but certainly near the top of the list. Kenny maybe has that same kind of potential. It's certainly less likely than Emmett, I think. But then at this same stage of the season last year, I wasn't really paying attention to Emmett at all, so who knows?
Nor was I. Yeah, I think that was one of the things we flagged up when we talked about Big Brother Canada 1, which is Emmett, you know, despite playing in and getting disqualified from all of the competitions, was really not a big presence within the game early on.
Yeah, I think the one thing that made me kind of realize just what was going on in the house was when, you know, obviously the Shield in those first few weeks were talking a big game in the diary room, but while they were focused on doing that, Emmett was actually putting in the work with people to get them on his side. And so when you got down to like the final nine and final eight, it's like, okay, Tom's gone, the Quattro is splitting up, but Peter and Alec can't do anything even if they were minded to, because Emmett just has these solid relationships with everybody in the house, and they all feel much closer to him than they do to each other.
Right, I think that's a perfect way. And I shouldn't say, like, Emmett was very much visible on the TV show because he's in Quattro, he's nominated by Suzette week one, he's playing in all the competitions, and so forth. But I feel like we didn't see Emmett, not Kenny, doing a lot of the work that he was doing on the TV show. And I think with Kenny, we are seeing a lot of what he's doing. Like, we're seeing him develop those kind of bonds. And I think Emmett is a very good comparison, although I think that is pretty lofty praise for Kenny at this point. Like, that's a generous comparison.
Yeah, I'm saying the potential's there, but hasn't been realized yet, and may certainly not be. The one thing that does stick in my mind still from the first few weeks was, I don't know if you remember it, there's a scene where I think Heather told Rochelle that Kenny didn't like her, or something like that, and then Rochelle went back to Kenny and said, look, I'm hearing that you don't like me, and Kenny just instantly deflected it with, yeah, I've been saying that to a few different people so that when it comes back to me, I know who's been lying. And that, to me, is like, if I'm Rochelle and I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, I can't really safely talk to anybody about Kenny again because it could just go right back to him.
Okay, I was thinking, if I'm Rochelle, I'm pretty dumb and I'm going to totally buy that.
If you're Rochelle, you're probably not thinking, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I mean, do you not like that? I'm gathering that that's too wolfy of a response for you, because I feel like that's not a bad idea for what to say to Rochelle.
Yeah, it certainly could come across as very domineering, if you like, but it just stuck with me as something which we haven't really encountered before, I don't think, and which, yeah, if he's able to harness that, could be used very effectively.
Oh, absolutely. I think Kenny definitely has, I'm very high on Sarah, so she may be the exception here. As far as, like, actual skills for actively playing a great game, I think Kenny is probably the top of the list.
Yeah, I think Kenny's, like, if Sarah goes on to win the season, I don't think we're going to be saying, okay, Sarah's an all-time great Big Brother player. If Kenny does, for the circumstances in which that would have to happen, we probably would have him a bit higher. But at the same time, I think Kenny's more likely to overplay his way out of the game than Sarah is.
Absolutely. And I think just Kenny just being himself is going to play his, maybe not actively like do things to get himself voted out, or evicted, excuse me. But just being who he is and being pretty intelligent and being cool with everyone and trying really hard in the competitions, that's not necessarily a good formula.
Yeah, also, one thing which... let's get on to Sarah now quickly, because she was the number three pick on the board. I took Kenny and her on the wheel, so they're pretty much at the same point in the draft. But Kenny recently came out to Sarah, and that was,
yeah,
I think, the first instance of him doing so, and I think she's the only person who knows still. So to me, that that definitely signals that the two of them are very tight and that they're the true power players in the house right now.
Yeah, and that, well, before we move on to Sarah completely, what are your thoughts about Kenny hiding the fact that he's gay?
Yeah, like, if you think back to him in the second week, just fighting so hard to get Carl evicted, I wonder how much of that is, like, him looking at Carl and thinking, this is the type of guy who is likely to be homophobic, and I've seen a lot of guys like Carl in my life who have fit that profile.
Yeah, and I think, generally speaking, just looking at Kyle, that's a valid concern. But I think after he spent 2 weeks with Kyle, he would probably not be that concerned about it.
From what I understand, though, Kyle spent most of his time with Paul and Adele. He didn't really spend time fitting in with the rest of the house.
Okay.
So maybe he just didn't have a good impression of him at that point. I don't know. But yeah, I think in general, like, he doesn't want to be defined as the gay guy in the way that I think people typically are on these shows. And so he wants to be able to define his own profile a bit more openly.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, it's an interesting idea on his part to hide it. And maybe he's waiting, like maybe the design the entire time was, okay, a few weeks into this, when I really need someone to trust me, I'm going to come out to them. And then maybe, if I'm confident they'll keep it to themselves, he can use this play over and over as long as Sarah keeps it to herself.
Yeah, it's I think Kenny, and one of the reasons I was drawn to Kenny preseason was I thought this is a guy who is likely to be able to work well with the girls while also being one of the guys, if you like. You know, he can straddle that fence very easily, and he seems to be doing a good job of that. And I think this secret, which might not be a secret for that much longer, is going to be a good way of just, you know, targeting specific people and getting them to trust him.
Yeah, and that was the next thing I was going to ask is, how long do you think Sarah keeps this to herself?
I think Sarah keeps it to herself for as long as Kenny wants her to keep it to herself, unless Kenny does something to turn on Sarah, at which point she will freely spill it, I think.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think and I don't see that happening, him doing anything anytime soon, at least, to wreck her spot. And I think you're absolutely right that I think Sarah recognizes this is such a big vote of confidence that he has put in her and being the person who knows. And such, what I would imagine would be like a pretty tender subject matter for within the house. For him to trust her with that, I think she definitely takes to heart and respects and wants to keep it to herself.
Yeah, there's a cynical part of me that wonders if this isn't a plea to get Canada on his good side in a week where Canada is controlling the nominations and everything.
Oh, interesting.
But who knows? Anyway, we said we were going to talk about Sarah, and then we spent 2 minutes talking about Kenny. So let's move on to Sarah then.
Sorry, yeah, let's do so. And, sure. So Sarah was someone, as I think I said earlier, or maybe I said this to you off air, I did not know who Sarah was until the Divergent POV competition, where I don't think she even, did she have a confessional in like the first 4 episodes? Like, I remember I literally seeing her as they were giving commentary on that Power of Veto competition, be like, who the fuck is this woman? Like, yeah. But hey, listen, much like with John or like with Arlie, that's a great sign when it's early in the Big Brother game, and no one really knows who you are and you're just hanging out and being cool with people. But yeah, as we've touched on a couple of times so far, I think Sarah, maybe even more so than Kenny, has very real talent for this game. So let me ask you, when you picked her third overall, was it because you saw that, or was it just process of elimination and no one else really stood out?
Yeah, partly it's because of a lack of better options, but that difficult position she was forced into where she had to out herself as the mole, and then the way she came back from that, not by doing anything in particular, but just by blending back in and massaging over those cracks in those relationships, that really focused my attention on Sarah as someone who isn't a flashy player, isn't a dramatic player. When you see these scenes of her talking about missing her family and crying and just wanting to win HOH to get that letter, it's easy to write her off as just this emotional player whose head isn't really in the game at all. But when you look at what she's actually doing in there, I think she is playing maybe the best game of anyone in the house at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely think at this point we have the most reason to be confident in Sarah as being a good player than pretty much anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and listen, she's a mom. What are you going to do? Like, of course she's going to miss her kids.
Yeah, I mean, she might be like the dawn of the season where everyone just, based on her demographics, just instantly trusts her, and then she's able to exploit that in ways which maybe leave them feeling burned at the end, but which at least get her further in the meantime.
Yeah, I think she definitely has, I think with Dawn, and we saw Dawn go on to get no jury votes, which is crazy, where people feel so burned by her being Dawn, if she betrays them. Whereas with Sarah, I think she's a much different type than Dawn, where yes, people are, for her own benefit, going to trust her basically implicitly, but they're not going to feel totally surprised and shell-shocked if Sarah ends up backstabbing them. If anything, when she votes Paul out, and people are now aware that, oh, Sarah's a player here, that's going to do her a lot of good down the line when everyone knew from week whatever it was, three or four, that, hey, Sarah is really here to play, and as much as I do like her, she is playing the game and is doing so in such a way that I'm probably going to respect it.
Yeah, and Sarah, more so than maybe anybody else, and this is a really big thing to say this season, is someone who isn't actively antagonizing the outcast, right? Like, she's not someone who's calling Allison New Girl behind her back. She's not, she's not ostracizing Heather. She's not driving away people who could be useful to her if only she's willing to put in the work there. Like Arlie, for instance, who is kind of going around with his supposedly diabolical schemes. Sarah seems to be the one person that he's putting his trust in at the moment, right? So Sarah, yeah, if she wants to go with that option, she can do that. Or if she wants to stay with Kenny and the others, then that's open to her as well.
Right, and I think that's a very good sign, like having Arlie's trust. And I think John is cool with her. And of course, Kenny, Andrew, Sabrina are all very cool with her. Where when it's the people who have no external motivation to like go out of their way to trust you, yet they still do, much like we saw with Emmett last season, that's only going to mean good things. Or like with Dan. I think Dan's one of the best at that.
Yeah, so if you had forced me to make a distinct first pick, I would have taken Sarah over Kenny and by extension over everybody else, just because I think she has shown these kind of talents which I don't think are unique in the grand scheme of Big Brother by any means, but where on this season I don't think she really shares those with anybody else.
I wouldn't hate having Sarah as a winner pick at this point.
No, I mean, I do, so...
Yeah.
It's,
Yeah, and as much as I wish I could berate that, I can't.
Well, you took John instead, so it's all on you, really. Yeah, while everyone else was getting outraged over the Ika thing, she was the one person to really have a sense of perspective and say, look, I may be more beat up about this than anyone else as a mom who's really missing her kids, but I understand why Ika felt she had to do that.
Yeah, and listen, perspective is the golden ticket in the Big Brother house. Like, if you can keep your head on straight, you're going to do just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to now with the 4 and 5 picks. With the 4 and 5 picks, I picked Netta and Arlie. Let's start with Netta, because I'm sure we're going to have plenty to say with Arlie. Let me ask you, are you seeing what I'm seeing in Netta? Because I very much am liking what she's doing.
I like what I see of her. My worry is that she's far too passive, right? Like, when Sabrina was doing her best to sabotage Ika and Rochelle during their HOH weeks, she was the one having the good ideas and being the voice of reason, but she wasn't being a loud voice of reason. She was letting Sabrina do her thing and wasn't really being a counterweight to that. And I worry that in doing so, she's not really, like, she's making people aware that she has a good head on her shoulders, but she's not actually putting that interaction in any way.
Okay. I guess for me, it's kind of like what I just said with Sarah, where when she does have a head on her shoulders and she does seem to pretty much really understand the game, you're doing better than 90% of people who have ever played Big Brother, just right off the bat.
My other concern is, at the moment, she and John are spending so much time together that firstly, the two of them are being seen as something that needs to be broken up, but also she's not spending the time just getting the mood of the house and being with other people.
Yeah, and that definitely concerns me. Like, the last thing you want to be doing is, when you're in a spot like John or like Netta is drawing attention to yourself and making yourself look like part of a pair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're spot otherwise, if you could, like, listen, be best friends with Netta or John all you want, but don't make it so visible. And I think that's definitely something that, like, if anything's going to get in either of their ways anytime soon, I think that's it.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, with Netta, very much liking her perspective of everything we've heard her talk about the game, loving her position. I don't know if her being as passive as you described is necessarily going to remain the case, but I definitely am with you right now that, you know, kind of letting Sabrina run the show when she could otherwise perhaps be doing something to protect her own interests is certainly not the call. But I do think, you know, just based on what we've seen so far, Netta strikes me as the type to understand that as the house gets smaller, or, you know, the number of people in the house gets smaller, she's going to start ramping it up a little bit. And I do think if she gets to the end, she could have some winning chances against pretty much everyone left.
Yeah, if there is some kind of firm counter-alliance form between, like, her, John, Adele, and Heather, let's say, and one of them wins HOH, I can see her being instrumental in deciding how they use that power. But at the moment, it's like, she's this voice on the sidelines that isn't really doing anything to influence things. So when all these things are exploding around her, she's going to be safe, but she's not affecting the direction that that takes afterwards.
Right. And when I pick Netta number four overall, it's not, oh, I think Netta has actively done the most to put herself in a great position. It's Netta's position itself is pretty tough to pass up with these set of picks, I think. I think Arlie was easily more questionable than Netta here. I think Netta may be the biggest lock to be into like the final five or so, final seven or so, because of course anything could happen. But I'm still feeling very, very good and happy to have Netta on my team. Yeah, so very excited now to be getting into one of my favorites this season, and I'm sure we're going to be disagreeing quite a bit now. Arlie, I took him fifth overall. So what don't you like about Arlie? Because it seems to me like this dude is just hanging out, staying cool with people. I'll definitely grant that he's kind of a weirdo, but that doesn't really matter when it comes down to playing the Big Brother game.
Arlie's like Eckstein without the credentials. Right, he has that same kind of sense of self-worth, but at least in Eric's case, it was partially justified, and at least Eric had his own unique remit that he was working towards. Arlie seems to think he's God's gift to Big Brother without having actually done anything of any importance whatsoever.
Right, and that may be why, Dom, he's God's gift to Big Brother, which is it's been a month and no one's pissed at Arlie, and that's good news.
But no one's pissed at Arlie because he hasn't done anything of note at all. Right, and that includes doing anything to firm up this alliance that he's supposedly a part of. He's on the outskirts of it, mostly by his own hand, flirting with the idea of flipping and trying to get something together, but he's not actually done anything. And the end result of that is that no one in the first five really feels any loyalty to Arlie beyond the fact that he happened to be there on day one. No one actually has a vested interest in Arlie doing well right now.
Okay, so maybe in my just twisted, perverse Big Brother mind, I'm thinking all of that, good.
No, I mean, the thing is, when it comes down to it, like when we get to crunch time, Arlie has nobody that he can count on in there, and no one feels that they can count on Arlie, so I don't see how he's going to make this work.
Right. The thing is, though, that there's 2 months between now and the time that it's going to actually matter for him.
Okay, I could buy what you're saying if Arlie had just been keeping everything under wraps and was carefully biding his time until the right moment came, but when you look at when Arlie actually tries to talk strategy with people, he comes across as so wolfy that you wouldn't even believe. It's like, I remember when he was trying to get this super alliance of like Adele and Heather and people together, it wasn't actually him talking about things in this open and concrete way. It was more just like, look, I'm in control of this house, and in 2 or 3 weeks you'll understand why, and I want you to be a part of it. Which, firstly, no one's going to believe that coming from Arlie, and secondly, even if they did believe it, that's not going to give them any reason to trust him because they don't have anything substantial to cling to.
Okay, I feel like as the game progresses, they're not going to need anything substantial to cling to. Granted, that would be helpful, but I feel like Arlie is playing the hangout, don't win any competitions, be cool with people, but not be too cool with people so they don't feel betrayed by you, if anything has to go down. But at the same time, playing such that people are able to trust him.
Nobody trusts him. That's a problem.
Okay, that is a problem. And maybe I'm making this pick because I'm not familiar enough with the live feeds and what have you.
You're not getting off that easily. From the show, there is nothing that would make you think that Arlie has any merit to him as a player whatsoever. Okay,
except Arlie's position and his attitude. Which is, I'm not going to do shit for the first month, which is perfect.
This isn't even like a Shield style thing where if you just watch a show, you might think that they were playing as good a game as they were talking. Arlie just isn't saying or doing anything that would give you hope about him at all, and yet you still seem to be in love with him. I don't get it. I really don't.
Okay. All right, listen. I don't buy that 2 weeks from now, Arlie is going to be controlling the house from there until the end.
Yeah, and I don't buy it either. You know why? Because he was saying exactly the same thing 2 weeks ago, and he still isn't. And he will be saying it every 2 weeks until, you know, the end of time, right? And it's never going to happen.
Listen, people are going to get evicted, and the field is going to dwindle to such an extent that if Arlie just being cool with everyone who's left at, like, final 10 is a huge bonus and much better than most people could ask for.
Right, but when you say being cool with them, what you mean is he's going to be, they're kind of going to be only vaguely aware that he's even there. What little they do think of him is going to consist of this sense that, well, he's kind of he's kind of untrustworthy, but he's not really a big priority yet, so we can, you know, push him back for a few weeks. But no one there actually feels any kind of overwhelming positive emotion towards Ali. And I can easily see, like, let's say there's a double eviction week somewhere down the line. Ali could be a prime target for something like that, just because nobody's going to care that he's gone, and nobody's going to want to be able to, and no one's going to try to keep him. So, like, he's going to be, like, if someone wants to take a week off to not anger anybody in the house, Ali is a perfect person to boot, because everyone would be kind of happy that he's gone, but it wouldn't come across as such a big move that you look like somebody to worry about.
Okay. And Arlie, it seems to me, is clearly trying to play the Andy Heron game. And Arlie, let's put it out there, Arlie is no Andy Heron. But at the same time, I'm so in love with Arlie's position, where so many people are just happy to keep him safe. And, you know, a month from now, no one's going to be that mad at him, such that I feel like everyone else trying and playing aggressively is much worse than Arlie just doing nothing.
Okay, but I think you love Arlie's position because if somebody, a true thinking player, was put in it, then they could convert that into a very good spot for themselves. The problem is that Ali isn't in that spot because of any conscious effort of his own. He's in that spot because he is legitimately non-threatening, and because no one actually cares about him. And so it's not as though he's feigning this image of weakness so that at the right point he can, like, unveil the true Ali and go on this tear through the house. This is actually who he is, and this is all that he can do.
Yeah, and as much as it pains me to say this, maybe the most painful phrase I've ever uttered on this podcast, you're convincing me, Dom, that Arlie is not, in fact, you know, God's gift to Big Brother that I so adamantly believed.
Here's the thing, right? Even if there is some kind of, even if he is putting on this masterful facade, I don't buy that if Arlie is able to manipulate, or I think more likely get dragged to the finals, I don't think he can convince them, like, that when he tears off the mask, he is actually this genius that's been playing them the whole time. I think if he says that, he's going to come across as a dog, and he's going to be the laughingstock.
Yeah, I definitely can see what you're saying there, where Arlie seems to believe his own hype more so than even I do, and pretty much all of Canada and America and apparently England do.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I'm substantially lower on Arlie than I was about 10 minutes ago, but thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
All right. So let's get into your number six pick, that being Allison. So I'm very curious, why take Allison so high? Because it seems to me like people are, and granted, listen, there's not a lot of, once we get past Allison and Adele, there's not a lot, and maybe Sabrina, there's not a lot of talent left to be taking. I don't necessarily disagree with the pick.
Okay, well, really, I think once you get past Ned, and even that might be stretching it, I think there's not much talent left after that. Allison's someone who, and again, maybe this is just because I like her based on what I've seen, but she's someone who, once that initial cattiness is dispersed and people have more serious things to worry about, and especially if Andrew goes and it's not at her own hand, I think if there's some alliance that forms in the aftermath of that, she could be a central part of it. And at that point, I could see her being like the Sharon of the season, where she's going to be there towards the end, not really with a good chance to win, but if the right things happen, then maybe she could be in there with a shot. But I think it's a very slim one.
I certainly don't disagree with taking Allison here. It just strikes me that it seems like so many people have, for whatever reason, decided that they don't like Allison. And obviously that's going to be a big hurdle in her way.
Yeah, me taking Allison here is not because I have some great faith in Allison. It's because Andrew's leaving this week, and Heather's not winning Big Brother, and neither is Rochelle, and no one likes Sabrina anymore. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fucked up that Adele fell this far. And granted, it's because I got very greedy, and I thought maybe he would fall to me later. But Adele is in probably my top four candidates at this point.
And again, I stress that I took Allison and Adele on the wheel, so they're functionally in the same spot. If you force me to pick one, I might still pick Allison, though, to be honest. I think with Adele, and we can move on to him now, I don't, based on what I've seen, I see him as a guy who's going to be the underdog for as long as he's there. I don't buy that he's going to be able to switch things up and form this this new alliance that goes against the first five. I don't think he's capable of that.
With Adele, it's just so much more his free agency.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like, his strategy, and I don't even know if it's a strategy so much as just who he is as a person, of, getting close to the people on the bottom, the people who are about to be evicted, like Ica and now Heather. I like that idea of trying to bring in the people who don't have anyone else. The problem is that because they're on the outs, if they get evicted, which is likely given their position, then you've wasted all of that time and effort, which could have been spent shoring up your relationships with other people. And I don't think Adele is... I just don't think he's in this for the long haul. I think for as long as he's there, he's going to be the guy who people root for and who is going to make a good shot at it, but can't ever piece it together.
Right. And I think, honestly, even more so than Arlie, Adele seems like the prime candidate for a double eviction to me. When someone wins HOH and just wants to make some kind of non-offensive move, inoffensive move, I suppose, Adele could easily be just like the default guy.
Yeah, like I think one thing we could easily see is Adele goes up against Heather or against Rochelle, and no one's ever going to vote either of those two out as long as Adele's up there on the block.
Right, yeah, and that's unfortunate. But at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of upside with Adele, and I'm almost regretting now after talking through Arlie and so forth that I didn't take Adele instead of Arlie with the fifth pick.
Okay.
And just because I feel like when that upside comes in, it's tremendous upside. Like, if he gets defaulted into kind of like an Exterminators-esque alliance.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Because I certainly think Adele has a very easy time winning if he gets to the end.
The problem with that is you need people like Andy or Spencer to make that kind of alliance happen, and I don't see any analogs for those two in this season.
Maybe not direct analogs where the players are so much like them, but I could easily see John and Netta being people who would be happy to go with some impromptu alliance towards the end. So Adele, anything else on Adele?
I don't think so. This whole thing with his power, I don't know. I feel like eventually people are going to compare notes about that, and when they do, they're going to realize that the one thing that made them scared of him originally or made them maybe want to team up with him was a fabrication, and that's not going to end well.
Right, and that's definitely a concern, which is at some point he's going to reveal this power. Like, as long as he's in the game, he will presumably eventually use it, and that's going to be rough for him to overcome.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't blame him at all for doing what he did originally. I think that was a very clever way of getting himself out of a terrible spot, but just eventually you know that that's going to come back to haunt him at some point.
Right, yeah, and that's a problem. But, I mean, can you blame him for taking the immediate benefit of this fabrication rather than telling everyone the truth about what he has? Because I feel like, especially in his spot, it's definitely worthwhile.
Well, as I just said, no, I don't blame him for doing that. But okay. I just don't... Okay, I feel like once you have a lie like that, then you have to be carefully following it through at every point to make sure it doesn't fall apart. And someone who would need to... And someone who would be able to do that probably wouldn't be in Adele's position in the first place.
I don't know about that, but I definitely do buy that if you're going to pull that off, you can't have the impression with everyone else that, oh, I'm being totally straightforward with you all the time. You need to, certainly not to the same extent as Will Kirby, but I think there's a lot of value, especially in Adele's position, of having people know that, hey, maybe I'm going to be doing some things that may not be on the up and up.
Yeah, and to be clear, apparently, and this is based on one feed report, so this could be wildly inaccurate, what he told people while Ica was still in the house was, he has this power for 2 weeks, and then if he doesn't use it, it turns into the power that he actually has, which is to replace someone in the veto comp.
Oh!
Which is actually quite inventive, because it means that if he does eventually have to use it, then it seems like it's just consistent with what he's been saying.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, man, make your lies check out.
Right, but now it's like, once it gets downgraded to that in other people's eyes, you don't have to be scared of Adele's power anymore. So if you want to put him up, you can put him up, and it's done.
So as things stand now, everyone's basically aware of what Adele's power is just by virtue of him not having used it so far?
It seems like that, but it also seems like it came out in a way that doesn't make people trust him anymore.
Okay. I still think Adele is an automatic pick here.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the last person who I don't think is 0%, and that may be even generous on my part here. Let's talk some Sabrina, because Sabrina's been a major player, which I saw, which came out of nowhere for me.
Yeah, I was absolutely not expecting that. It's been very entertaining to watch, but when you see it, you automatically know that this is a kind of temporary reign of terror, and it's not going to amount to anything permanent for her.
Right. I think the amount of comparisons we made earlier are very apt, which is Sabrina, for as long as she's in the game, is going to have a massive amount of influence, but she will not be a long-term player.
Right. It's a thing where she's going to see herself as having influence, and other people are going to want to keep her around because she's an excellent shield for them. And so the fact that they want to keep her around and they're letting her do the dirty work on everyone else, it creates the impression in her head that she really is the one controlling everything in the house. And so when she gets this rude awakening, then it's a much more dramatic fall than it would be for someone who is trying their best in the game, but who's aware that at some point it could just come to an end for them.
Right, right. And I don't mean to imply that Sabrina can't possibly make an endgame. I think she certainly can. She's not a realistic winner candidate for me, and I think she's the thing I take issue with the most is her violation of rule number one in Big Brother, which is you are not Will Kirby, which is to say I think she's playing so hard and thinks that she is just dictating everything that happens in the house, and there's just such a small chance that it's not going to come back to punish her.
Such a perfect description of Ollie right there. But yeah, Sabrina, I'm not sure there is an obvious comparison beyond Amanda, but one that I might make is like Natalie from BB11, where she's like, she's able to kind of get people to do things on occasion, but she gets to the end and seems to think she had a lot more power than she did and is like kind of violently disabused of that fact by the jury.
Well, okay, see, I guess different from that, I don't question that Sabrina is actually exercising such influence over everyone. I just think it's not going to work out.
Sure, but as I said before, it's like, when you see that you can exert this influence over people, you should want them to be there for as long as possible, and for them to be in a good position in the meantime as well, so that you can continue to do that. Like, why? Like, she knows that whatever we want to say about Andrew, he's at least aware that she is doing her thing. Kenny's probably the biggest threat in the house. Sarah's maybe second. Why force yourself to match your wits against them when you could do it against the likes of Ika and Rochelle and Heather, you know?
Right, right. And I think the problem for Sabrina is, for someone like her, I think the optimal game plan is something like a June Song game plan. And she's playing far too much like Amanda than June for my tastes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into, I think, no offense intended whatsoever. I think the last three people that we haven't talked about yet are completely just drawing dead at this game. And let's start with Rochelle. She's the last member of my team. I don't even know what all there is to say about Rochelle. I don't really care that she won the week 4 HOH. Like, I don't think anything Rochelle does in the game really even matters for anything.
Yeah, she's, I think the best summary of her was one of those, like, the 20 faces of Rochelle posters, where it was just like the same expression, like, Rochelle is happy, Rochelle is sad, Rochelle is hungry, and so on. It's just, there doesn't seem to be anything going on upstairs. They're just not, it's just a cycle.
Yeah, and I don't mean to pick on Rochelle. She seems totally fine. She doesn't seem like a bitch or anything. Maybe she is, who knows? But she's certainly just not Big Brother material.
Well, she was a big part of the whole cattiness surrounding, like, Heather and Allison and so on. I buy that outside the house she's a perfectly pleasant person and everything. It's right. Just that within the house at the moment, she's just not a factor, really.
Right, but I think and you're absolutely right, that she was one of, like, the catalysts for the whole new girl thing, instead of calling her Allison. But I feel like that's just Rochelle kind of defaulting to her the experiences that she's had with kind of like catty girls in the past, which I'm sure are plentiful.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But either way, yeah. She's not someone who, I think you're right. She is drawing completely dead to win. Her only real function, I think, is as a goat for somebody else, but that doesn't even look all that likely anymore.
It doesn't look overly likely. Although I would not be surprised whatsoever if we wind up here 2 months from now saying, oh, Rochelle got second place.
Yeah.
She definitely, I mean, I don't even know who would vote for Rochelle in the finals. Like, I could see that being a unanimous victory.
I mean, Ika might have done before Rochelle just turned on her and voted her out for no reason. But other than that, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Heather, your girlfriend, Heather. Tell me why I should love Heather and why Heather's not completely fucked in this game.
Not my girlfriend, Heather. And she might be completely fucked in this game, but she's cute. I like her.
Yeah. Listen, Heather seems fine. As Corinne said on RHAP, sweetie, use your grown-up voice. Like, her, yes. Her,
Like, I completely buy why everyone in the house might find her infuriating. There's just, like, such a stark contrast between the way that the other girls in particular have been acting towards each other and towards Allison and so on, and the way that she just seems, you know, permanently upbeat and happy about everything.
Yeah, Heather strikes me as, like, the prototypical Big Brother contestant who's ostensibly fine and, like, isn't going to do anything. Like, she'll take offense to things if the other girls come attacking her, which I think is obviously a likely scenario, given that she's probably the most attractive one in there, and that tends to happen in Big Brother. But at the same time, she certainly isn't going to be putting up a fight for herself, and she's certainly not going to be winning the game.
Yeah, I think she could easily be, like, the Tala of the season.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I honestly feel like Tala is, like, best case scenario for Heather.
Yeah, although, now that she's survived this initial phase, are people really going to come after Heather?
No, and that's the thing. But are people really going to vote for Heather in the end? That's the major consideration.
No, of course not, right? But the problem is, before, that you had people like Ika and Rochelle who were minded to put up Heather. Ika's gone now, and I think once Andrew's gone, if Rochelle is co-opted by someone like Kenny or, God forbid, even Ali, right, there's not going to be this great movement to get Heather out anymore.
Sorry, I stopped listening when you said Arlie had a chance to be good.
I didn't say that. I was indulging you for the sake of argument, okay?
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, I don't even know what all there is to say about Heather. Like, she seems totally fine. And that there's not much more to it. Like, she's just... she's either going to the final five or she's going to be gone in 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah. And again, yeah. She could be prime double boot material.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Once we get down to, like, 8 or 7 people... if there's an alliance of 4 or 5 that's clearly controlling the house at that point, I could see, you know, Heather being the one person who's just on the outside of that. And even though no one thinks that she's a threat, she's just not in the alliance, so she has to go, and that's the end of her.
Right, kind of like Ashley in BB14.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk about this last person that we haven't talked about. And honestly, having him at the bottom of our list is not a function of just knowing that he's about to get booted. I could have made this list 2 weeks ago, and Andrew would be at the bottom of it, just because he's playing so hard, so fast. And it looks like, excuse me, it looks unfortunate that he's going to be taken out at Canada's hands. But where do we want to get into with Andrew?
I think we said all we really need to say about Andrew, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, certainly he's come up, he's been like a focal point, he's probably been the biggest focal point of the season.
Yeah, I feel like his eviction really speaks for itself, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely didn't not bring this on himself, to use a double negative.
Yeah, it's like, if this hadn't happened, then in 1 or 2 weeks, if the wrong person won HRH, he would be up and he would be gone. And, right. You know, I think the only real consequence of this, of it happening this way, is that he's not going to make the jury.
Right, he strikes me as just, like, a much more likable version of Tom Plant.
I don't know about that, necessarily, but yeah.
Do you not like Andrew? I like Andrew. What's wrong with Andrew?
I don't not dislike... I don't...
Triple negative! Here we go!
Okay, I don't actively dislike Andrew, let's put it that way. I think he's... in a way, he's, like, the perfect villain to have on a show like this, where he's not... I don't think he's a terrible person or anything, but he's just someone who you can easily root against within the confines of the show.
Right. I think he has no idea that he might even be a villain, apart from Canada nominating him. But I think prior to that, he thought he was just playing super hard and super well.
Yeah, and honestly, if I was in the house, I could easily see myself thinking, like, yeah, of course everyone's going to think that Ika is a bitch and that, you know, and that I'm doing my best and that I'm a strong competitor and so on. That makes sense for Andrew to think, given who he is and how he looks at the world. But it's just not how everyone else sees him, and that's going to be the problem for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I know we talked about this as we talked about Canada being HOH. It is such bullshit that Canada's taking out Andrew. As someone who's played so hard and really been the focal point of the season, I am so not okay with that.
Well, when you say he's played so hard, I mean, you seem to be using the standard, like, casual definition of, well, he's won competitions, so...
Right, absolutely. That's accurate.
Why should he be spared, therefore, over someone like, I don't know, like Rochelle or Paul or whoever would have been there instead?
Whomever, first of all. And secondly, it's just because it seems like Canada would be targeting the most aggressive players, like the people who are actually getting screen time. And I don't know what stands out about Andrew. I get it. He's kind of a dick from time to time. But I don't see why we need to be taking Andrew out with a Canada's HOH here, when in all likelihood he's going to go anyway, and it just fucks everything up as far as like purity is concerned for Canada to be the one to take the first shot.
Okay, but if you're concerned about purity, when you understand that this is going to happen at some point, wouldn't you rather it happen to someone where his boot is already a foregone conclusion?
I would rather it happen, kind of like what happened to Topaz last season. I would rather it happen to someone who was, and granted, yes, Andrew was already fucked. But I would rather, like with Topaz, that this kind of twist I don't want to say deliberately to screw one individual person, but then it had come later, and then it had happened to someone like Rochelle or something like that.
Yeah, like in a way, Andrew's downfall would be more satisfying if it came in the hands of someone who was actually in the house with him.
Right, exactly.
And competing with him in these competitions and having these arguments with him or whatever. Instead, it feels very impersonal, like this kind of hand of God is reaching down and smiting Andrew. And it doesn't have the same weight to it.
Right. And furthermore, you know, he only has the power of veto. Listen, as much as an advocate against competitions as I am, he only has the POV to save himself. Whereas in a traditional week, he would get to at least play for HOH.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess I would like this kind of interference by the audience more if it was meant to draw something out of someone like Topaz, who in her season wasn't really a big presence up to that point, and convert them into a really important player, at least temporarily.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just strikes me that Andrew is too big of a presence to do that to. Very, very very much unsatisfying. So anything else on Andrew?
No, not really. I mean, I'll be interested to see how he comports himself in his exit interviews, actually.
Yeah, I think Andrew's going to be a lot like Tom, where he's pretty cool in his exit interviews. And incidentally, list of people in the house that are older than me. Andrew, Sarah, and...
Dude, Rochelle was born in 1993. Do you know how terrifying that is?
Yeah, that is fucking insane. So before we get out of here, though, I definitely want to ask you about Arissa Cox and what you're making of her this season.
I don't think she's cut out for a role like this, personally. I mean, she seems very good at like hyping up the audience for big moments and stuff like that in real time once she's there. And I've heard from people who have been in the audiences for those live shows that between those segments that actually make the edited show, she's actually very personable, very good at her job and everything. But I just don't see that coming across when she's actually on our TV screens.
Yeah, and Arissa strikes me as someone, and this is different, like as we talked about Baby Can 1, I was a defender of Arissa, and my opinion, unlike yours, has very much changed, which is I think Arissa is an excellent host. She's not an excellent Big Brother host.
She would be an excellent host for something like an entertainment award show or something like that.
Exactly, yeah. She's just, and I say this as someone who is grossly informal 24/7, she's just far too casual. And maybe it's because we're so used to having the Chenbot or Jeff Probst, who rarely gets overly animated, where it just strikes me as, I don't want to say unprofessional, but she doesn't seem to be taking the game as seriously as I want it to be taken.
Yeah, it's like when she takes every cut to commercial break as an excuse to get overly excited about something.
Right.
It takes all of the actual kind of suspense or anything out of the show. And I think the best example of that for me, it was the whole Ika shredding the letter scene, which, as I said before, I think was incredibly momentous and powerful. And then it just was completely deflated when we cut back for Arissa Cox saying, "Oh my God, guys, what was that?" It's like, it's just not, you can let the audience process that for themselves, and you can give them enough credit that they're going to think the same thing that you are without having to ram it down their throats.
Right, yeah, and there's definitely a lot of stuff that she says that is apparently intended to come off as like new and surprising information when anyone knows that she already knew.
Yeah, like when you act like everything is some revolutionary or surprising thing, then nothing is, right?
Right, exactly.
Everything in moderation as far as hosting is concerned.
Right, yeah. And listen, like Arissa seems cooler than anyone in the house. But certainly, there would be some tweaks I would make as far as how I would have the host approach the show.
Yeah, you would have your Arissa bot reprogrammed.
Right, exactly. And quickly, before we close out today, have you gotten the chance to watch any of the sideshow?
I have had the chance, and I have not taken up that chance.
Yeah, I have declined the invitation. I watched about 10 minutes of the first one that Jillian was on, and that was enough Peter Brown for me.
The same people who I referred to just now as being in the audience doing those live shows said that everyone in there just took the sideshow as this running joke that no one really cared about or took seriously.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I mean, listen, and maybe plenty of people listening to this right now feel the same way about you and I, but Peter Brown just waxing poetic about all of the elite Big Brother strategy he knows is just so fucking dumb to me.
Yeah, and I'm sure we would both fail in equally horrible fashions if we were to ever play a game like this, but at least that's an open question for us. Whereas Peter's like right now and has been like a bit of bitch in his exit interviews, and he can pipe down for a bit and just take a few seasons off, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
I feel like I would at least know to veto Topaz there in Final Six.
Or I'd at least know that once I got out of the house that it was a mistake, and like that I shouldn't be lecturing people about, you know, about what would be doing in the house anymore.
Yeah, although I gotta say, I'm still a fan of my boyfriend Gary Levy. All right, Dom, anything to get to before we get out of here?
I think that's pretty much it until, like, 3 months' time when we next discuss this show.
Yeah. No, I want to make this a more regular thing. This is a very good time.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Yeah, let's do it. We got Survivor in about an hour and 15 minutes, which I'm very much excited for. We'll definitely be back to talk about that in a couple of days from now. Dom, anything to get to before we get out of here?
No, let's leave it.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a rating if you're so inclined. We'll talk to you guys very soon. Take care, everybody.